Lightly about himself. Will anything good come of it? That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Volodymyr Zelensky and Donald Trump have started their talks with European leaders at the White House as they try to end the war in Ukraine. The US presidents claimed the war could be stopped without a ceasefire.
The six or so wars that we stopped, we haven't had a ceasefire. And so I don't know that it's necessary. You can do it through the war, but it would be, I like the ceasefire from another standpoint. You immediately stop the killing.
That's something the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz says needs to happen.
To be honest, we all would like to see a ceasefire. I can't imagine that the next meeting would take place without a ceasefire. So let's work on that and let's try to put pressure on Russia.
Donald Trump says the US will offer Ukraine security guarantees moving forward if it agrees to a peace deal with Russia. The president says he will now organise a trilateral summit involving President Putin. Former UK ambassador to the US, Lord Darroch, told LBC a trilateral meeting is rare before agreements have been arranged by diplomats.
And you wouldn't let leaders into the room until it was basically ready, maybe all except one or two small points for signature. And the idea that you would actually start with a leaders meeting and then try and do the deal literally at that level. I mean, you know, if Trump pulls it off, we'll all look rather stupid. But it's absolutely the opposite way from which agreements in the past have been negotiated.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump has interrupted the meeting with European leaders to call Vladimir Putin. That's according to a new report in Germany tonight. He initially said he would do that after the meeting. On to other news now, and a man will be sentenced next month over a shooting which injured a 9-year-old girl and three men in East London. 33-year-old Javon Riley did not fire the gun, but helped to plan the attack in Hackney in May last year. A man's been taken to hospital after a tractor fell onto the M20 from a bridge following a crash. Kent Police says it was called to reports of a two-vehicle collision on the A227 near Rotherham this morning. And forecasters say this summer could end up being the UK's warmest on record. There have been four heat waves, and both in July and June, temperatures have been well above average. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed up 18 points at 91.57. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloud becoming more widespread across the UK tomorrow. Sunnier for Wales and northern Scotland, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. This is how Sean O'Grady in The Independent described what is happening. He said, it is, and there is no way of sugarcoating this, a pathetic sight. Europe's leaders arrive in Washington, D.C. as supplicants, virtually pleading with the Americans not to betray Ukraine. Well, it sounds about right to me. Let's talk about this with Keir Giles, senior consulting fellow at Chatham House for the Russia and Eurasia program and author of Who Will Defend Europe? Good evening, Keir.
Hello, good evening.
Do you recognise that description? Pathetic sight, supplicants?
Absolutely, and let's not forget that this is self-inflicted by these European leaders. We were in this exact same situation 6 months ago in February when it looked as though Trump and Putin were trying to stitch up a deal over the head of Ukraine and everybody scrambled for an answer. That was the first time we heard this phrase about the coalition of the willing, where supposedly European powers led by the UK and France were going to step in and make themselves relevant to the conversation, support some kind of peace settlement in Ukraine. But it's gone nowhere because they've come up against the sad discovery that there's a big difference between a coalition of the willing and a coalition of the able. So here they are surprised once again that Trump and Putin are at it and having to scramble once again to get themselves into that conversation and try to prevent the worst case outcome.
Yeah, are they fighting two leaders? Is Trump actually not on our side?
Trump hasn't been on our side for a long time. We've had these waverings from Trump where he reflects the views of the last person that's spoken to him, and if that last person was Volodymyr Zelensky, then we hear some more positive noises about trying to prevent Russia murdering Ukrainians at will and trying to protect Ukraine against Russia's invasion. But of course, that hasn't lasted. As soon as he's been in the room with Trump again, we've had that 180-degree flip, and he's pushing for everything that Putin wants.
Yeah, I've heard that said many times, that Donald Trump actually just, his opinion is that has been delivered to him by the last person that he talked to. But Putin is different in that regard, isn't he? It's almost like attached to him by elastic. He can be pulled away from Vladimir Putin by the last person that Trump talks to, but then he just eventually, or quite quickly, springs back into into Putin's orbit and just seems to parrot whatever the Russian leader wants him to say.
That's exactly right. He snaps back as soon as he gets the opportunity. There was some hope that this hypnotic hold that Putin seems to have over Trump had been broken eventually through Trump realizing he was being made to look an idiot by Putin stringing him along. But no, it hasn't lasted, that meeting. And let's not forget, it's not just Trump. It's those around him, too. You've had his envoy, Steve Witkoff, traveling to Moscow repeatedly. And although a lot of the time it seems he doesn't really understand what the Russians are telling him, he's all too willing to repeat what he thinks he's said, and really show that he has a very, very shaky grasp of the real issues that are at stake. And that, too, is dangerous, because he's reporting back to Trump and to the world, and he's laying the groundwork for this disastrous meeting in Alaska.
Yeah, it sort of points to a certain unseriousness in the Trump approach to this, because Steve Witkoff has zero diplomatic experience. He's another property developer, a billionaire who gave money to Donald Trump. That appears to be his only qualification for the job.
That's right. That's been disastrous. But we have to be careful about calling it unseriousness, because the Trump team is deadly serious about the job they've taken on. The only problem is that job is very dangerous, not just for Ukraine, but actually for Europe as well, because their primary aim seems to be demolishing any way the United States has of obstructing Russia, removing the United States as an obstacle to Russia meeting its ambitions in Europe.
What did you make of the Alaska fiasco? I mean, everything about it was off, from Trump having to walk what seemed like half the length of the country to his own red carpet, the red carpet laid by American military on their knees in front of Putin. And it was all thumbs up and cheesy grin to the camera before they went in. And when they came out again, Vladimir Putin was still smiling, but Trump looked like he'd been beaten up.
Yes, it was a mess, not just because it was slapdash and put together at the last minute, but also because, of course, it hands Putin yet another victory. It hands him the endorsement and the legitimation that he's been looking for, being greeted by Trump as the superior, and Trump afterwards saying, well, we're number one in the world, referring to the United States, and Russia is number two, which anybody that's looked at this subjectively knows is very far from the truth. But then the way they are making this up on the fly, just like you were saying about Steve Witkoff a moment ago, is bound to lead to disasters like this. Just a few minutes ago on your show, you had Lord Darrow talking about the normal way in which you would construct sometimes ceasefire agreement, and how this is exactly the opposite. And that goes for so many of the things that they are trying out on an amateur basis. We shouldn't be surprised that it doesn't work.
Yeah, and so why are we putting so much faith and in Trump to actually negotiate this then? Couldn't the European leaders who are genuflecting before him now have saved themselves the trip and actually put their might behind Ukraine and taken Trump out of the equation entirely?
Well, you might have thought so, but here, unfortunately, we're dealing with the aftermath of not just years, but decades of decisions by European leaders that they didn't have to have their own highly capable armed forces. They could outsource their defense to the United States, leaving them completely dependent on the U.S. So when, again, back in February, you have Keir Starmer saying, well, of course British forces are going to be going into Ukraine, of course they'll be in the lead of a coalition of the willing, less than 48 hours later, he had to say, well, actually, no, we can't do that. without the Americans. And the Americans have said very clearly at that point that they were not interested in playing any role of that kind. So we're faced with the situation where after all of these decades of cuts to armed forces, both of the UK and of other countries, they're just not capable of fulfilling those political tasks that are being set before them. And that's why these European leaders still have to go cap in hand to the United States.
And on that subject, Trump said, I mean, he seems to change his mind with the direction of the wind, but he said lately that it's possible that US troops would provide a presence in Ukraine. But that was a maybe and an if, and it's possible. It wasn't a guarantee. It's almost as though he's just musing aloud.
That is exactly what's happening. There is immense confusion amid all of this speculation about what these security guarantees are supposed to be. Nobody really knows what has been discussed and agreed between Trump and Putin. You have Witkoff muddying the water again, talking about Article 5, like the NATO Article 5 about security guarantees.
Well, that's just mobile phones for you, isn't it?
Trump has at one point even said that this is coming as a new idea to him. So it is a complete mess. Nobody really knows what is happening, and we will only discover what the real agreement was over the coming days and weeks.
Yeah, I mean, previously Trump has suggested that when they were trying to negotiate this, or it was a shakedown, really, this minerals deal, Trump said that just the very presence of American companies in Ukraine would dissuade Vladimir Putin from acting any further. Is that likely?
Well, no. Trump may have said that, but nobody else believed it. This was precisely, as you said, we called it a shakedown. It was a justification for a mugging rather than a deal. It's a deal in the same way that if somebody says, hand me your phone and your wallet and I won't knife you, if that's a deal, then the minerals deal was as well. But who remembers that now? That's already, like so many of these initiatives, just slipped by into the past and become completely irrelevant because it's not been followed through by the United States.
What do you make of that report that while Trump was having this meeting with the European leaders, he got up to either make or take a call from Vladimir Putin?
Well, it seems perfectly plausible he'd have to check in with the boss.
For his instructions.
Exactly, yes. There's no doubt who he seems to feel he is beholden to, and it is not European leaders, it's Putin.
I mean, people have been wondering what it is that Vladimir Putin why he has such a hold over Donald Trump. You got any thoughts on that?
Oh, lots of thoughts, but the problem is we may simply never know. There have been great thick books written about Trump's dealings with Russia going back to the 1980s, and all sorts of speculation about what exactly it is, whether it is blackmail, whether it is financial entanglement, or just because he looks up to Putin as the kind of leader that Trump himself would like to be. The problem is that the United States had the opportunity to look into this with a counterintelligence investigation to find what is driving Trump to do this, but they blew that opportunity. The Mueller inquiry was set, the wrong questions to start with and looking into why all this was happening, and Mueller stuck to his remit, stuck to his brief, and didn't go above and beyond in order to actually find out what was underlying it all. So unless and until the KGB archives are opened once again in Moscow in decades to come, we may simply never know what it is that they have on Trump.
Right. And Trump keeps saying that Russia is a hoax. But, of course, I think it was 5 security agencies in America confirmed that Russia actually had at least tried to interfere with the American election. And Trump chose not to believe any of his own security people, but instead took the word of Vladimir Putin. I mean, you couldn't make it up.
Well, it gets worse. There is now a witch hunt and purges of all the people that were involved in those investigations. They're being hounded out of government service in the United States, threatened with lawsuits. It's exactly the same kind of revision of history that we saw back in previous decades in Russia itself, where you don't want the inconvenient version of what happened in the past to be known. So you suppress it and you eliminate everybody that actually was a witness to the events.
Yeah, actually doing that at the Smithsonian Institute, that Trump is saying that he has to personally audit all of their historical artifacts and so
yes,
on.
Yes, not just audit them, but actually dispose of, eliminate, destroy the ones that are inconvenient for his version of history.
Now, Trump gave a map of Ukraine to Zelensky, and it was a map showing the 20% or so of Ukraine that Russia currently holds. That's the deal, isn't it? That's what that was about. He just wants Zelensky to okay that.
Possibly. That is one of the interpretations that we've heard. It's one of the descriptions of what Putin proposed and Trump was supposed to agree to that have come out. But again, we don't have it confirmed. And of course, giving a map of Ukraine to Zelensky is just theater and just trying to reinforce the Russian demands. I think we can reasonably assume that Zelensky knows what a map of his own country looks like and exactly how much of it is under foreign occupation.
And even if Putin does get the 20% that's on that map that he occupies at the moment, do you think that that will satisfy him, regardless?
No, of course not.
Right.
Absolutely not. There is no doubt at all in the eastern part of Europe that when Putin says that his aspiration is to recover not just Ukraine, but all of those other countries who, you said, the early Bolsheviks 100 years ago made the huge mistake of drawing the lines on the map that we know as today's borders, they know he's deadly serious. Anybody that thinks that the war will stop at Ukraine thinks that the other former parts of Russia's empire that are now free and independent nations somehow get a free pass, and Putin isn't looking their way.
So is this entire exercise a complete waste of time then? Because if an agreement is made, let's say that Zelensky gives up the 20% of Ukraine that Russia currently occupies, that agreement's not worth the paper it will be written on.
Well, Zelensky probably can't do that, not only because it is against the constitution of his own country, but also because the popular will in Ukraine is still very much not to give over those territories and the people living there to this savage Russian military occupation, but to continue to fight on. Zelensky will be out of office immediately if he agrees to some kind of deal like that. The only circumstances are if he decides that the Russian demands reinforced by the United States are less bad than fighting on, but we're a long way from that at the moment.
And even if they are less bad, even if it does look as though it's something he can live with, what confidence can he have that, that any guarantee of security will actually could be relied on? Because we've already signed an agreement with the US and Russia concerning the nuclear arsenal that Ukraine gave up for guarantees of security, and look what happened.
That's exactly right, and it comes back to this whole conversation about what exactly do Witkoff and Trump mean when they talk about security guarantees. We don't know. It may even be that those European leaders that are still at this point sitting around a table in the White House also don't know. If Trump hasn't been able to give them a coherent explanation of what Putin said he would permit, then there's no way we can tell just what is on the table. No doubt they will have been saying what the baseline is, but it remains the case, as Ukraine has been arguing for some time, that the only real security guarantee, the only real way of preventing Russia from invading them further, just like for other neighbors of Russia, is membership in NATO.
Right, which makes it doubly odd that Witkoff said that they mentioned a sort of Article 5 type NATO guarantee. What on earth did he mean by that?
Who knows? It may be that even he doesn't know. Looking at the number of times that Witkoff has come back from Moscow thoroughly confused about what the issues are and what the Russians have told him, I think mean that all of this time when we've been hanging on his every word, there should have been a great deal more skepticism about exactly what he thought he was saying.
Yeah, and just on that, as an aside, I mean, it does sort of reek of amateur hour that Witkoff, Trump's envoy, actually went to Russia without an interpreter.
Yes, and then when he was provided with an interpreter by the Russian side, which is you don't have to be a diplomat to recognize how stupid a move that is, pointed to her and said, "Is she from the embassy?" And the Russians all said, "Oh, yes, of course she is," and he went along with that. It would be hilarious if it wasn't so tragic.
And just finally, in an apparent off-mic moment, Trump said, Putin wants to make a deal for me, Donald Trump. As crazy as it sounds, he said. That does sound crazy, doesn't it?
Not at all. How will Putin have gone into the room with Trump seeking to manipulate him by playing to his ego, by flattering him, by doing exactly the same as the European leaders have been doing all along, but by exploiting also this fascination, this hypnotic hold that he has over Trump and playing on that. So if Trump finds that Putin, the object of his admiration, is paying him this attention, of course he's going to roll over and go along with what Putin wants.
What a state of affairs. Keir, thanks very much for that. That's Keir Giles, the Senior Consulting Fellow at Chatham House for the Russia and Eurasia Programme, and author of Who Will Defend Europe? Well, that's a good question. Who will defend Europe if Europe is apparently incapable of defending itself to the point that they have to go cap in hand to hose Donald Trump down with flattery? It's vomitous. Really? Isn't it? 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850. Email nicka@lbc.co.uk. If you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone. 0345 6060 973. Do you think anything positive is going to come from this at all?
This is LBC.
There now follows a message from the Prime Minister.
Some of you may know, my husband is being held hostage. They are targeting me. They have weaponized my family. I will not be threatened. My loyalties are to this country. I will not allow it to be held to ransom. And anyone who thinks that I would has badly underestimated me.
Hostage, starring Saran Jones. Coming soon only on Netflix.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus duty only while stocks last. Terms apply. See Lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So if Donald Trump is the key to world peace, then the human race has taken a wrong turn somewhere, surely. I was driving in earlier. Hang on. I was driving in earlier listening to that press conference that Trump was giving with Zelensky. It was one of the most extraordinary things I've ever heard in my life. It was as though someone had said, Alexa, show me what a babbling baby sounds like in the voice of a confused old man. He just went on and on and on about himself. I felt like driving into a tree just to make it stop. The man vomited up his brains on television and no one even mentioned it. Concentrating on the one or two few sentences that did seem to make some kind of sense and ignoring everything else that happened in what seemed like hours of him just blurting out whatever just happened to flit across his forehead. This is the man that we're relying on to bring peace. Have we lost our minds? 0345 6060973. Stourbridge, Sally.
Oh, hello, Nick. I'm very tempted to put my phone down because your guy, Keir Giles, said everything I wanted to say. But anyway, I'm here now.
Very good. So, well, let's have it in a different voice. Go on.
In a different voice. So I had to ring out. I forgot it was a serious, not a silly show, because I had this vision of Trump's face. You know that face when he suddenly realises he doesn't understand a word that's being said to him.
Yes.
And he gets up, runs, says, I'm just going to make a phone call, runs out, picks up the phone, says, Vlad, they're bullying me.
Yeah.
I've agreed to everything. What should I say now? And have you got a spare dasher?
Yeah, exactly. Can you remind me of my lines?
The whole thing is just such a charade. It's almost as stuffed as the last one, where he went in thinking he was going to have a deal for 7 hours and came back out after 5 minutes white-faced.
Yeah, white-faced. I've never seen him look like that. He looked it looked like he'd just missed a two-inch putt.
Absolutely. Well, you could see that he went in saying, oh, this is what we're going to do, and then the reptilian eyes of Putin looked at him and said, no, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, the now difference...
Now, shall we talk business?
Yes, the difference before and after was absolutely extraordinary. It was all cheesy grins and thumbs up for the camera, and he was applauding Vladimir Putin, a mass murderer, applauding him on American soil. Absolutely extraordinary. And he came out looking like Putin had used him as a punch bag.
I know. The whole thing, I've never seen... In fact, I keep saying I've never seen anything like it in my life. Mm. And then I see something else I've never seen like it in my life.
Yes.
And then another one. And then I think, am I on the Truman Show? Yeah. Is this real?
Am I hallucinating or is this real life? Yeah.
And you know this idea about people, him believing the last thing the last person spoke to him about?
Yes.
You know, that idea. Well, I'm the same. The last book I've read is what I believe. And I've just read Careless People by Sarah Wynne Williams, which I can heartily recommend. It's very readable.
Mm-hmm.
She worked for Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh.
That is terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. And now do you want to hear my conspiracy theory?
Why not?
Yeah. Basically, it doesn't really matter what Trump does. He can go off and babble here and babble there and do what he likes and sign this and sign that. He's not running anything. He's just being sent out to distract people. And in the background, whatever it was, if you read this book, even Mark Zuckerberg didn't know what was happening with Facebook in Myanmar and in the Trump election. Whoever's running it is running it on their own.
Well, I suspect that whoever, if there are other people running it, then they appear to be using Donald Trump as a battering ram. And I'm not entirely sure whether Donald Trump realises this or not. I guess one way or the other, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter, and I don't think he does. But I don't know what the rest of us do. We can't keep sending our heads of state running to their their planes every 5 minutes. Say, no, don't say that, Donald.
All right, good talking to you, Sally. Well, I mean, I guess we can be appalled, or we can choose to be amused for whatever small time we have left on this earth. John in Devon says, how many wars was it that Trump said he ended already, and how can we didn't know about it? How come, maybe? How come we didn't know about it? He's bragging that he ended 6 wars. Which is just as truthful as anything else that comes out of his mind. I don't know whether he really believes this stuff. I suspect that he does. I suspect that there is no truth filter to his brain. If he says it, then he's convinced that it either is true or becomes true just through force of his own personality. But there are no 6 wars that Donald Trump stopped, and I would challenge him or anybody else to name them. Prove me otherwise. Alan in Reigate says, Trump and Putin are going to keep stretching time out, and where would any trilateral meeting take place? Well, I would imagine that Trump would insist that it would be on American soil, and Vladimir Putin, now he knows that he can travel there without getting arrested, he would probably agree to that too. I mean, it's not going to be in any European country. Putin wouldn't go there for fear that he would never see the sun again. But I seriously doubt that any such thing will ever happen. Vladimir Putin would agree to be in a room with Vladimir Zelensky. And if that does actually take place and Trump is the other corner of that trilateral meeting, then that's, you know, from everything that we know and see, that's 2-1. That would be all the European leaders hopping on a plane to sit in the room next door, hoping they'll get invited in eventually, sitting in the antechamber. There's more, though. Alan says, also, Trump, when talking with Zelensky, made it obvious he wants to rule the US dictatorially. If you listen back to his lies about Washington, D.C., and his comment regarding no voting other than the way he and the Republicans set it up, he is still in full power grab mode in the USA. Well, it's... I think journalists have kind of given up. They've sort of... They've given up fact-checking. There doesn't seem to be any of that anymore. I mean, there was a bit during his first term, but they've just flat-out given up now, and they just take on board, without question, anything he says. He said, without any pushback from the press whatsoever, that no country in the world has mail-in voting. I mean, anybody with access to the internet can find that that's not true in about 5 seconds, but nobody says a peep to the man anymore. It is as though America is being run by the Sopranos. It's been taken over by the mafia. It's a coup. And people are just as cautious, terrified of saying anything back to the Don as they would be if he were an actual real Don. What a state, eh? 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850. Email nicka@lbc.co.uk. If you are on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone, 0345 6060 973. 10:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Daryl Jackson.
It's being reported this evening that Donald Trump has interrupted the meeting with European leaders to call Vladimir Putin. It's understood he took the call in a different part of the White House to where he was meeting with the European leaders over the war in Ukraine. It comes after a German newspaper reported on the development and said the meeting would continue afterwards. A man's been found guilty of attempted murder and grievous bodily harm over a shooting which injured a 9-year-old girl. 33-year-old Javon Riley didn't fire the gun but helped to plot the attack in Hackney in East London. And two Bradford City supporters have been arrested for alleged racial abuse of a club official during their game against Luton. At the same time, an away fan was arrested because of racist gestures reportedly aimed at a player. LBC weather, cloud becoming more widespread across the UK tomorrow. Sunnier for Wales and northern Scotland, a high of 26 degrees.
LBC, Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your radio and on Global Player. LBC.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus duty only while stocks last. Terms apply. See Lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears. Give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yeah, we're talking about this extraordinary meeting of minds in Washington. Taking your text on 84850. You can email nicka@lbc.co.uk. The phone number 0345 6060 973. Do you think that anything that gets agreed with Vladimir Putin is worth relying on? I mean, if it were, none of this would have happened in the first place, because the US, the UK and Russia signed that famous Budapest memorandum that guaranteed Ukraine safety as long as they gave up their nuclear arsenal. Well, they did. And then no security was to be found. So why deal with a man who's already told, two men? Trump's is just as untrustworthy. Dealing with two men whose word you can't trust on. You can't take trust on with two. There's a sentence in there somewhere. Epsom. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Nick. Have you put your teeth back in?
Yes.
Right, well, listen, as far as I'm concerned, I think the Tito and the rest of his Red Hand gang in terms of Europe have been totally and utterly nutmegged by Putin.
Yeah.
This is an entire and utter distraction from what's actually really going on. You look deeper into things, you're actually going to find that the build-up of Russia in terms of troops and military equipment are now forming again on the Belarusian border with the Suwalki Gap, which is one of the biggest Achilles heels of NATO right now. You've obviously got Kaliningrad on one side, you've got Belarus on the other side, and that's where you're finding this build-up again, which has been proved on satellites at the moment.
It seems hard to believe that Russia could prosecute a war on two fronts. They can't even succeed on one.
Exactly. Well, there you go, Nick. You know, they'll concede on one side, but they're building up on the other. They're building up on the other. You know, they'll sort this out with Ukraine, and they're planning, you know, to come in from either side, from Kaliningrad and from Belarus. That's where they build up. They built this up entirely last time when they invaded Ukraine. I mean, I can't believe that our leaders and Trump and all the rest of it are that dumb to realise it. They're literally just being pulled one side and, you know, on their blind side, it's being built up at the other end.
Mm. Well, I think if Vladimir Putin was actually interested in peace, then he would not be saying that while his troops were shelling cities in Ukraine. I mean, you can have one or...
He's quite happy to settle. He's quite happy to settle there. He's taken bits. But what he really wants is those other three, you know, is, what is it, Latvia, Lithuania and Estonia?
Mm.
I think something along those lines.
Yeah.
You know, the Suwalki Gap is what separates them from Poland. You know, and in between there, you've got the most fortified area of Europe, which is actually Kaliningrad, which is Russian-owned. So if they come in from one side, and where they're building up the troops on the other in Belarus, which is exactly what they did before they invaded Ukraine, if they cut that off, then there is no land reinforcement for NATO to come through Poland to save those other three states. Okay, the only way they will be able to save them is via air and via sea, and it just becomes an absolute disaster for them.
Well, that does suppose that Russia actually has the wherewithal to actually engage in further fighting. They don't seem to be very successful in the war that they've got right now. Never mind about prosecuting another one. But that's an interesting thought, Chris. Thanks for that. Leonie says Europe and the UK are mugs if we think Putin will stop. I'm calling it now. The payback won't be bombs. It'll be cyber hacks and disruption. Well, we've got that already. I mean, some people say, you know, some experts I've said, you know, I've raised the prospect of World War III, and I've been told on several occasions that we're already in World War III. We just don't know it yet. And it is cyber hacks, disruption, all sorts of psyops that the Russians are engaging in. Many would say that even if they didn't orchestrate us leaving, or at least give assistance to those that were orchestrating us leaving the European Union, it could not possibly have worked out better for Russia. Upper Edmonton. Hello, Layla.
So with this obviously meeting that's happened today, the thing that really kind of got up my nose, and I was really just sitting there thinking this is really a load of hot air, was this whole idea of security guarantees. They kept saying, oh, we'll have security guarantees, we'll have security guarantees, we'll have NATO-style security guarantees where an attack on war is attack on all. And I was just thinking, this is really a load of hot air, isn't it? Because Putin has said all along, well, obviously, that a major red line for him is, A, Ukraine being part of NATO, and obviously any troops from NATO countries being in Ukraine. So the idea that obviously Trump is pushing for a peace agreement and not a ceasefire, which I'm going to come up, go on to next, because I think that's a load of hot air as well, is well, if you know that for Putin a red line is that no troops from NATO countries are allowed could be in Ukraine, then clearly saying that I want a NATO-style security guarantee in this agreement, clearly that's a load of hot air, and you know that Putin is never, ever, ever going to agree to that. And
I'd be amazed if America were to agree to it. I mean, I know that's what Steve Witkoff said, but, you know, what does he know?
I just was sitting there thinking this is a load of hot air. To say that you're going to provide security guarantees, NATO-style security guarantees, when Putin is not going to agree to any kind of deal that would ever involve NATO troops
even if they did agree to a security guarantee, not worth the paper it's printed on, because before and they didn't adhere to that deal.
And I mean, I just the other thing that I was thinking, sitting there thinking hot air, hot air, hot air, was where Zelensky, obviously, without having a referendum, he legally can't kind of give away the Donbass without a referendum. But clearly it's just hot air, hot air, hot air, hot air. If it wasn't hot air, Trump said, oh, I'm going to put on secondary sanctions. I'm going to sanction all the countries like India and China that buy oil from Russia, but he's not even done that. So clearly, and the fact that, you know, I remember in the meeting, Merz and Macron were saying, we need a ceasefire before we have a peace agreement. And Trump was like, no, we don't need a ceasefire. It's just, the whole thing smells of hot air. The whole thing smells of hot air. Obviously, there's another word I have in mind, which I can't say on the air.
Okay, I did feel that you were going to say hot air again. I should have put money on it. Thanks, Layla. 0345-6060-973. Yeah, Trump said that he was going to place some sort of financial penalty on India because they're buying oil from Russia. And then he said that that America would like to normalize trade with Russia if this all, if this works out, and buy oil from them. So he's threatened to punish a country for doing the thing that he said that he wants to do. It's just too, if it wasn't so serious, it would actually be funny. Let's see. Helen says, Trump had that shocked, beaten look that you see with the loser, small fry character in movies with the mob. The loser thought he was one of the tough guys, but gets slapped down for making a decision that went badly. He did look like he'd been slapped. Yeah, no doubt about that. It looked as though Vladimir Putin had burnt all of his money in front of him. What did he say in that room to deflate Donald Trump like an old balloon? 0345-6060-973. Let's see. Reigate, Alan.
Good evening, Nick. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Nice to listen to Keir and to the lady that followed him, because they nailed it. Absolutely, between them, nailed it. And the sad thing is, Donald Trump is, there's a shadow of a doubt, after 1987 onwards, Krasnov. He is an asset of Putin.
Well, if he is, then it would look exactly like this, which is not to say that he is, but if he was, this is what it would look like.
Well, he's been alleged to be that many times online by many, many people in business, in LinkedIn, who've actually made comments about it. So it definitely looks that way, but that's life. And as for him and what he's doing, he's allowing Putin the time, and that's what Putin wants, to regarner himself and rebuild and get more people in positions where they can further their agreement and all the stuff they want to do with Ukraine. There is no peace coming, I'll tell you that now.
Well, it does seem as though if Putin was interested in peace, then he would stop he would at least think about pausing the fighting. I mean, he's getting such a small amount of land for the soldiers that are dying acquiring it, that it wouldn't affect the war in any way if at some future point he wanted to restart it. He's not going to lose any land. He could just stop the bombing and the shooting now in order to have a talk about peace. But he's not even prepared to do that.
No, it's not about what he's fighting on the land with the soldiers. It's about using the weapons he has to blow up houses and to blow up hospitals. And he's doing exactly what he did in Chechnya, exactly what he did in Georgia, exactly what's been done in Syria. People need to wake up. This man, along with Trump, is now the most dangerous combination this world has ever seen since 1938-39.
And do you think that anything could come of all of these grand names that have gotten a plane and left, presumably, their holidays with their families or other, you know, vital business of state to hotfoot it over to America to act as a defence shield around Zelensky is what it looks like?
Well, yeah, and sadly, the only way they could do that was to tell Trump how wonderful he was.
Over and over again. Yeah.
Constantly, yes, ad nauseum, as they say, and it certainly was ad nauseum.
Ad nauseum is exactly right. It is absolutely sickening the way people talk to that man as though he is a two-year-old with a temper.
I'll give you the three definitions that fit Trump to a T. He's a geisha, he does not debate. He's a grifter, he's always on the make. And he's a shyster who's totally untrustworthy. And he's proven it. And yet, sadly, he's POTUS. He's president of the United States. And he's working with Putin.
The world's most powerful human being. I think our race has taken a wrong turn somewhere.
Yeah, we went left instead of right.
Exactly, exactly so, yeah. Or actually right instead of left.
Yeah, right instead of left.
Yeah, there you go.
Even I'm confused, Nick.
Thanks a lot, Alan. 0345-6060-973. We're going to take a short break. More of your thoughts on all of this. This, I don't know, how would you describe it? This farrago, this show. I mean, if it wasn't so very serious, it would be so very silly. But do you think anything positive can actually come of it? 0345-6060-973. After the break, I'll be joined by LBC's Westminster editor, Aggie Chambre, for more reaction to today's meeting.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
A second council has vowed now to remove British flags attached to lampposts as part of a patriotic campaign. Can you see how it might be provocative? Simon's in Exeter.
A flag of St. George being sullied by the far right, so I can understand why the council is worried about it.
Ahmed's been waiting very patiently to come on the radio this morning.
People should be proud to wave the country flag. As you can see from my name, I'm an ethnic minority. I just moved to the UK about 6-7 years ago. Okay. Where I come from, the Middle East, people wave the flag. There is no shame in that.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
The people have spoken. Drivers have voted. And the Auto Express Driver Power Family Car of the Year is, wait for it, the Vauxhall Astra. Chosen for its design, drive and onboard tech. Get behind the wheel and experience the award-winning Vauxhall Astra Griffin Hatch or Sports Tourer today. Two models, one offer. Both $325 a month with $325 initial rental. Search Astra Griffin now. Personal contract hire and Astra Griffin 1.2 manual hatchback or Sports Tourer. 48 months, T's and C's, subject to status and availability. You will not own the car, Stellantis Financial Services.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Mm. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no.
Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
Yep, that's the number if you want to tell us what your thoughts are about what is going on and has been for the last few days now. 0345 6060973. Let's talk now to Aggie Chambre, who is LBC's Westminster editor. Hello, Aggie.
Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. Donald Trump said that Zelensky can stop this war immediately if he wants to, or he can keep fighting. What do you make of that?
Well, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because I'm not sure exactly how that would work, how Zelensky would end the war. And I'm not sure that many people really understand how that would work. And I believe that part of that language, part of that narrative has actually come as a result of the meeting, that showdown he had in Alaska with Donald Trump on Friday. Because before that, he seemed to have slightly different lines, slightly different thoughts on the matter. But ever since that meeting, he's been saying things like that. And I think a lot of what happened today, what the aim was today from the European leaders going over to the White House from Zelensky being there, was to try and kind of shift Donald Trump's vision back, his view back, and try and get him on side. But there are things that have changed since that Alaska meeting too. It's not just the language on that, but it's also about whether or not Trump is in favor of a ceasefire. At this time, Donald Trump seems to have ruled out a ceasefire, a change since last week. And that actually came up. Friedrich Merz, who's the Chancellor of Germany, insisted that we would all like to see a ceasefire when he was talking in the top of that meeting earlier today. So a lot has changed in the last week. And I think the European leaders will be hoping that some things might be able to change back. They'll be hoping that they've been able to cajole, convince Donald Trump in the meeting. And actually, just in the last 10 minutes, there's been confirmation that those meetings in the White House have now concluded.
Are we expecting any sort of announcement after?
I think we will get some sort of readout. It wasn't clear whether or not they were actually going to do press as European leaders, but Vladimir Zelensky, a spokesperson, has told NBC News since that meeting the meeting has ended, but European leaders and Ukrainian President Zelensky are staying for now in DC to continue talks, potentially in another format. So we don't know exactly what that means. But the whole thing seems pretty movable, a bit of a movable feast at the moment. I mean, the whole thing seems extremely unconventional. There are reports from a German newspaper that actually in the middle of the meetings, Donald Trump just took a call or made a call to Donald Trump. That's unconfirmed, but that's being
to Vladimir Putin.
So all extremely unconventional, not what I think a lot of the European leaders are used to.
Well, no, quite. I mean, neither are we used to seeing all of these European leaders drop everything at the at a moment's notice and hop on their various planes to go and play defence to a man who's meeting somebody who appears to be taking his orders from the enemy of the West.
Well, and you know, it's not a particularly big deal in the grand scheme of things at all, but worth noting that Keir Starmer was on his summer holidays, his only holiday of the year, so he was expecting to be in Scotland with his family, and this all happened very, very fast. And of course, it was only on Saturday that the European leaders were actually invited to the White House, and for about 24 hours it seemed like Keir Starmer wasn't going to take up the invitation. But then I suppose the pressure of other European leaders and Ursula von der Leyen as well, saying that they were going to go to the White House, made it very, very difficult for him not to follow suit. But as I say, all extremely unconventional, and the fact that they're even having these conversations and the fact that Donald Trump's having these conversations with Putin is just, well, it's just extraordinary and not something that would have been believed even a few weeks ago, really.
It is all a bit embarrassing, though, isn't it? I mean, the leaders of great superpowers in Europe debasing themselves in front of this painted clown off the television, just hosing him down with flattery as though he's a toddler. It couldn't get any more toe-curlingly embarrassing than this, surely.
I'm sure it could.
Yeah, I felt you'd say that. Yeah.
I'm sure it could. But it's fascinating. Leading leaders, the head of NATO, Ursula von der Leyen, prime ministers, sitting around this table, and Donald Trump sort of going to them, and then they had their little moment to speak in the meeting. And it seemed to, at least at the beginning, follow this absolute template where they'd say, thank you so much for having us. We couldn't have done this without you. You're amazing. They didn't quite say that. But it really did feel a little bit like that. And it's just, you know, it just does feel extraordinary. But they have all obviously decided, the European leaders have decided that is the best way to deal with Donald Trump. And you know why, because they see what happened to the Ukrainian leader back in February when he went to the White House. And there was this extremely difficult meeting with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And Volodymyr Zelensky basically had to kind of apologize afterwards. And European leaders look at that and think, well, we don't want that. We want to stay on the right side of him, because that's when we have some power, and that's when we are able to convince him of things.
It does seem as though they don't have any power at all, though. I mean, just the very fact that they're all on a plane, you know, desperate to affect some sort of change by telling Trump how marvelous and huge and tremendous and great he is. I mean, they don't have any power at all. It's kind of, it's just embarrassing.
Well, I guess you have power if you're inside the room, right? And they were not inside the room in Alaska. Vladimir Zelensky wasn't even inside the room in Alaska last Friday. They weren't inside the room in the Oval Office today when it was just Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky talking. They did get to be inside the room. They got to be in the meeting for a bit of today. How much change they will have affected during that meeting, I guess we'll find out. But it's something that a few months ago would be unthinkable. Then, you know, Donald Trump being in the room, being in these trilateral talks, and it was something that Macron brought up. He didn't want them to be trilateral talks. He wanted to also be in the room. Whether or not that's going to happen, it feels pretty unlikely. But it's just, it's extraordinary that he's saying, we would also like to be in these talks, but it's just not going to happen. But, and yet Donald Trump is going to be.
And they're all staying there, aren't they? They've had a meeting. I think it's finished. We don't know whether they're going to say anything afterwards, but the European leaders are staying there, aren't they?
Well, we expected Keir Starmer to come back tonight, actually. Oh. Obviously, they're 5 hours behind over there. But as I say, we've just got that statement. There's really scant information. We just got that statement from Zelensky's spokesperson saying they're going to continue, they're staying for now in DC to continue talks, potentially in another format. So what exactly that means is not completely clear at that stage. Perhaps there will be different talks. Perhaps there'll be a press conference. I don't think we know at this stage, and it does feel like things could change and could change quite quickly.
They're winging it. Aggie, very good to talk to you. Thanks for that.
Andrew, thank you.
Aggie Sharmborough, LBC's Westminster editor. So what are your thoughts? 0345 6060 973. Bootle. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Nick.
Sarah.
Nick. After seeing today's fiasco, the only word for it, I wouldn't trust Trump or Putin to go on a message for a pint of milk. One would most probably poison it with Novichok, and the other one would say, oh, no, well, I've got, you didn't tell me to go and get milk. I've gone and got myself some sugar dummies. Seeing as they both behave like overgrown, bullying little toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
And watching what was going on, I just crawled. I thought, I feel like I'm having a really bad dose of deja vu. Because on Friday, it felt as if I was watching what was going on between von Ribbentrop and Beria when they were dividing Poland up. I thought, oh yeah, I know what's going on here. And now it feels more like the Munich conference when Chamberlain came back waving a piece of paper saying peace in our time, which wasn't worth the paper it was written on, because we were at war a year later. And anybody who thinks for one minute that anything that Trump or Putin say is worth anything, you must be joking, because peace deals or trade deals or any deal that Trump puts up, he always rips up. He's about as trustworthy as about as straight as a corkscrew. I mean, all I can say is, after watching his body language on the television tonight, I mean, which was just, I just thought, I'm going to throw up. It was literally, I thought, but I saw him, I went, yes. This just proves that on Friday, Putin must have took along a nice little file on that he has in the Lubyanka. All the compromise that he's got on Agent Krasnov.
Well, it would be surprising.
Yeah, anyone knows you've got to read Byline Times to know that.
All right. Okay, thanks, Sarah. I mean, yes, it does seem as though something was said in that room to really drain the life out of Donald Trump. I mean, even through his makeup, he looked grey. I've never seen him look so beaten up. And the fact that he allowed Putin to talk first, for a start, and in Russian, and for about twice as long as Trump talked, I mean, that just spoke volumes. Whatever happened in there was enough to make Donald Trump look like the end of his life had just been shown to him on screen. Thanks for that, Sarah. 0345 6060 973. After the news, I'm going to be joined across the pond by LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks for his take on what's happened so far. And I'll keep taking your calls with reactions. So call me now, 0345 6060 973. Also, before the end of the show, I want to talk about the increasing price of weight loss drugs, the possibility of weight loss drugs for pets, and the increasingly bizarre weather we've been having and the prospects for the rest of the summer. 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, President Trump has promised Ukraine's US security guarantees if ceasefires can be reached with Russia. The US leader has been meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky and European leaders at the White House. Mr. Trump said the next steps will be to organise a trilateral meeting involving President Putin, who he claimed was also ready to end the war.
The Alaska summit reinforced my belief that while difficult, peace is within reach, and I believe that in a very significant step, President Putin agreed that Russia would accept security guarantees for Ukraine, and this is one of the key points that we need to consider.
Meanwhile, it's understood Donald Trump interrupted the meeting with European leaders earlier to call Vladimir Putin. But the Ukrainian president's spokesperson says the talks in the White House have resumed in a leaders-only format. It comes as a White House official confirms the East Room meeting has concluded. Well, Peter Caddick-Adams is a military historian and broadcaster and told LBC the stakes on this are high.
We do have a rampant dictator who's already proved that he can't be trusted, that if he's left alone, then he will probably repeat his bad behaviour and stray over somebody else's border. And it's not just Ukraine where he's done it. He's been into other countries, starting with Georgia. He's also had adventures in Syria. So on past performance, there's a very Hitlerian nasty streak.
Elsewhere tonight, a man's been found guilty of three counts of attempted murder after a shooting at a restaurant in which a nine-year-old girl was shot in the head. 33-year-old Javon Riley was the getaway driver in Hackney in East London last May. The gunman hasn't been caught. Detective Inspector Ben Dalloway says they're pursuing a violent criminal network.
We have a reward of up to £15,000 for any information that leads to the identification, the arrest, and the prosecution of this individual, but not just the shooter, anyone else who's involved in orchestrating this shooting.
A man's been taken to hospital after a tractor fell onto the M20 from a bridge following a crash. Kent Police, as it was called, to reports of a two-vehicle collision on the A227 near Rootham this morning. And Leeds returned to the Premier League with a 1-0 win at home to Everton. The hosts scored from an 84th-minute penalty, controversially awarded after a VAR review. LBC weather, cloud becoming more widespread across the UK tomorrow. Sunnier for Wales and northern Scotland. Scattered heavy showers for southwest England, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Right, we're going to talk to Simon Marks in just a moment, but here for your listening pleasure, Donald Trump's greatest hits from earlier on this evening.
The war is going to end. When it ends, I can't tell you, but the war is going to end, and this gentleman wants it to end, and Vladimir Putin wants it to end. I think the whole world is tired of it, and we're going to get it ended. It was, you know, I've done six wars. I've ended six wars, and I thought this maybe would be the easiest one, and it's not the easiest one. It's a tough one.
Yes, sir. I've got a question for each of you. Yes. First of all, Mr. President Zelensky, you look fabulous in that suit.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, look, you look good.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, looks good.
I said the one that attacked you last time. Yes. See,
I remember that.
Yeah, I apologize to you. You look wonderful. No, my first question for you, President Zelensky.
In the same suit. You see, I changed you.
Maybe yours is much better.
President Putin wants to find an answer, too. And we'll see. And in a certain period of time, not very far from now, a week or 2 weeks, we're going to know whether or not we're going to solve this, or is this horrible fighting going to continue? We'll do the best to get it ended. And I believe you have two willing parties, and usually that's good news, but two willing parties that want to make a deal. And it's possible it might not be able to be done. On the other hand, it's possible it will. And we're going to save thousands and thousands of lives a week. And so it's something we really have to do, and or at least we have to give it our best. It's all you can do. You can give it your best, but I think we may have a very good outcome.
Simon Marks is in Washington, joins us now. Hello, Simon.
Evening, Nick.
Those were the bits that made sense. There was hours, it seemed hours of bits that didn't, and I've spared your ears from hearing all that again. What have you made of what's happened so far?
Well, we're all waiting to see where this has gone, of course. I mean, we've heard within the last few minutes that the expanded meeting with Zelensky, all the European leaders, and Donald Trump has now wrapped up. We have no idea what's going to happen next. The president indicated that he might take them all back to the Oval Office. I'm not quite sure what the purpose of that would be, unless he was going to sit them all down on the couches in the Oval Office and ask the cameras to come back in for some other kind of impromptu press conference, put them all through another 30 minutes of that again. I mean, we've already lost an hour of the day today to that kind of nonsense. 28 minutes with Volodymyr Zelensky when he arrived. At least it didn't end up in a schoolyard brawl. Mm. And then 24 minutes, I think it was, with the European leaders when they were sitting around the table, obviously itching just to get on with the work that they had come here to do. I will be surprised, I think, if they all go into the Oval Office and agree to talk to the cameras, because it was pretty apparent from the exchange that took place in the East Room, when it was really 8-on-1, I think, Zelensky, the seven European leaders on one side, and Donald Trump continuing to sort of articulate platitudes and express sympathy for many of the positions adopted by Vladimir Putin on the other side. I think it was pretty apparent that there were some very significant disagreements. Let me just play you this exchange. The German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, and we were told earlier in the day that he might brief the press once this day, this endless day, reaches a conclusion. Friedrich Merz challenged Donald Trump in the East Room today after the president indicated during his meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky that he didn't see any need now to negotiate a short-term truce, that they should just negotiate the long-term peace agreement, the Ukrainians and the Russians, without a ceasefire while the war was continuing. And of course, Volodymyr Zelensky argues that's completely impossible. There has to be a truce in order for negotiations to take place. This is what Chancellor Merz had to say about that, and then listen to Donald Trump's response.
Now the way is open for complicated negotiations. And to be honest, we all would like to see a ceasefire, the latest from the next meeting on. I can't imagine that the next meeting would take place without a ceasefire. So let's work on that.
I will say, and again I say it, in the six wars that I've settled, I haven't had a ceasefire. We just got into negotiations. If we can do the ceasefire, great. And if we don't do a ceasefire, because many other points were given to us, many, many points were given to us, great points.
I don't know what he means by many other points were given to us, presumably by Putin. But if we don't do the ceasefire, well, you'll just have to negotiate the end to the war while Ukraine is coming under attack. Now, when he says there, in the six wars I've resolved, yeah, I didn't do any ceasefires, It's completely untrue.
Well, he just makes stuff. I wonder if he actually believes what he says.
Well, that's what I was wondering today. Has he woken up today and actually believed that? If you look at the conflict, the skirmishes that he claims to have pacified between India and Pakistan, India, of course, insists he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
It was a ceasefire. It wasn't the end to, you know, decades of animosity between India and Pakistan. It was a ceasefire. Thailand, Cambodia, it was a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the end to all the tensions between those two countries. So on that, he seemed to be completely at odds with the Europeans. And Macron, Emmanuel Macron, France, telling him that the trilateral meeting, the idea of a trilat with Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky would be very interesting. But even more interesting would be a quadrilateral meeting that gave the Europeans a seat around the table. Because remember, dear Donald, they've got all sorts of security interests here. And if they're going to be providing the security guarantees in the front line, the first line of defense, as Donald Trump had described it, they really needed a seat around the table. So, you know, what we don't know is once the cameras left that room, given that Friedrich Merz, definitely Emmanuel Macron, I think to some extent Mark Rutte, the NATO Secretary General, and definitely Giorgia Meloni from Italy, were ready to have a bit of a ding-dong with him, we just don't know how that conversation has ended up.
Yeah, as far as points go, I'm sure that he meant that he was given points for his efforts in that regard, and you do recall that if you get it in order, you get extra points. And these security guarantees, what would that actually amount to? Because he seems to change his mind on that subject, as much else, with the direction of the wind. I mean, first he said it's not possible that America will do any such thing. Then he said that it was just the presence of American businesses in Ukraine would provide a security. And then Witkoff, his hapless envoy, said that it would be a NATO Article 5 type level of security, which is completely ridiculous thing to say, because NATO is the thing that Putin points to as the cause of this war in the first place. And then Trump is floating the idea of actual troops, and he's all over the shop.
Yeah, absolutely. And even while they were meeting today, the Russians put out a statement completely dissing the idea of NATO troops being deployed in Ukraine as part of any security guarantees. And you could tell from the exchanges that took place in the East Room that many of the European leaders, including Prime Minister Meloni, simply did not understand what Steve Witkoff had been saying on Sunday in that interview with CNN, which we talked about last night on the program, and which was complete gobbledygook. I don't even think Steve Witkoff understood what he was saying. So they all wanted to try and get to the bottom of what that means. Now, Trump did indicate today that he might be willing to provide some kind of an American backstop, some sort of muscle to enhance the prospect for robust security guarantees being provided by European NATO and non-NATO nations as that first line of defense. But we don't know if that means boots on the ground. We don't know if it means air cover. We have no idea what it means. And again, the overarching feeling that you had watching all of this play out today is that he just lacks the patience for all of this. He wants to call Vladimir Putin. Supposedly there's going to be a call with Vladimir Putin. The German news agency, news magazine Bild, is reporting that in fact Trump broke away from the meeting to call Putin. I've not seen that reporting confirmed by anyone else.
I've got it confirmed by President Trump himself.
Has he said that now?
Well, here is part of like a 1,000-word screed that he's just posted on Truth Social. I'll spare you most of it. I wonder how much he actually put into this himself, because almost none of it is in capitals. He said, I had a very good meeting with a distinguished guest, and he lists them all, and said, I called President Putin and began the arrangements for a meeting at a location to be determined between President Putin and President Zelensky. A very good early step for a war that has been going on for almost 4 years. Blah, blah, blah. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Yeah, but that's very strange, because I'm just looking at it now. I called President Putin and began the arrangements for a meeting at a location to be determined between President Putin and President Zelensky.
Mm.
After that meeting takes place, we will have a trilat, which would be the two presidents plus myself.
Yeah.
So now he seems to be proposing a bilateral one-on-one meeting between Putin and Zelensky. I mean, Lord knows if Zelensky and the Europeans have agreed to that. And then a trilateral meeting that would include him, with absolutely no mention in this screed that indeed has just been published on Truth Social about any kind of quadrilateral meeting that would give the Europeans a seat around the table. I mean, maybe Zelensky has agreed to a face-to-face unbrokered meeting with Vladimir Putin. You might think that it's preferable to having one brokered by Donald Trump. But whether Vladimir Putin has agreed to that, I think is a very open question, given his Kremlin officials' description of a face-to-face meeting with Zelensky being miles away just about 10 days ago. I mean, the overarching sense you get is that Donald Trump is impatient. He wants this resolved, and there will be plenty of people out there that say we all want this resolved. This war does need to end, and there's nothing wrong with seeking as rapid a resolution as you could possibly seek. But what I think he just doesn't seem to understand is that the complexities of this negotiation are going inevitably to be really difficult and time-consuming. I mean, Zelensky at one point today said that Donald Trump had got maps out during their Oval Office meeting, and they'd consulted maps.
Mm.
Well, you know, the point at which you're looking at maps, that's when things get really, really difficult and tough. When you're starting to talk about concessions that Ukraine is going to have to make in this negotiation, you know, you can't just resolve this with a snap of the fingers on a Monday in the White House, and by Thursday, you know, Russian forces are withdrawing from Ukraine. It's just not going to work out that way.
Yeah, even if you redraw lines with a Sharpie, it doesn't make it necessarily
yes,
so.
Exactly.
And that map that Trump produced showed the Russian territory that it already gained, which is about a fifth of Ukraine. So that seemed to me, I mean, what other purpose would he have of doing that other than to make the suggestion that that's the situation that you'll have to agree to get any kind of peace, to give up the land that Putin has already taken?
Yes, precisely. And as we know, what Vladimir Putin is trying to do is take the whole of the Donbass region in eastern Ukraine, which would place his forces on the other side of the existing defensive lines that the Ukrainians have, because there's a huge amount of territory there that Vladimir Putin's forces have not conquered, have not come close to conquering. So that, I think, would be a massive... I think it's impossible to imagine Volodymyr Zelensky agreeing to that, and certainly impossible to imagine him agreeing to it after what he's been through today at the White House, along with the European leaders. I mean, I do think we have to be pretty sceptical about this idea that Zelensky and the Europeans have agreed to a bilateral meeting between Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky. I mean, talk about a need for security guarantees. Who's going to provide those security guarantees for Volodymyr Zelensky at that meeting? I mean, definitely, you know, don't drink the tea.
Yeah, or steer clear of the nuclear sushi.
Yeah, I mean, so I think we just, who knows? We're going to have to wait and see what the European leaders say if and when they emerge from the White House and head back to the aeroplanes that brought them here rather faster than anybody anticipated after Donald Trump seemed to be beguiled by Vladimir Putin on Friday, Saturday and into Sunday.
Beguiled is one word. Terrified, I think, is another, from the look
well,
on his face.
Well, that as well, yes.
Yeah. you're across Trump's Truth Social feed. Was it fake news, or did he tweet, or truth, I think is what he calls it, did he put out the word Bella today?
I haven't seen that. Bella as in...
B-E-L-A. As though it's some sort of code.
Oh, I haven't seen that. What was the reference? What? Where was that?
It was... Well, I saw it on Twitter, and you just don't know what's real anymore, but it was a screenshot of Donald Trump having put out the word Bella, B-E-L-A.
I'm just and scrolling people, through his Truth Social feed, which will take me a while. but I don't see it on Truth Social in the last 11 hours.
Okay. all right. Always good to talk to you, Simon. Thanks for that. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. Going to take a short break, then come back with your thoughts on what you've heard and seen today, extraordinary as it's been. We'll also get some more analysis with a former strategic intelligence analyst. Friday, Saturday, ordinarily Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10, but I'm on at 10 all this week. This is Nick Abbott, LBC.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Hurry, the Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss out on up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, you can still get £50 off your electric blind order, an easy way to control your blinds. But be quick, these offers end 26th of August. And if you find the same product with the same service for less, we'll match the price. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. The Hillary summer sale ends soon. Don't miss it. Conditions apply.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See Lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's take a call in Wigan. Malcolm.
Yes, I see it as very positive that for the first time in over 3.5 years, the Americans have actually, their press has met with the Russian press in the symbolic place of Alaska, because, of course, Alaska originally was Russian, as you perhaps know.
Yeah, second worst real estate deal in history after Manhattan.
Well, anyway, the point is that it's a very positive development that Donald Trump met in person with the Russian president, elected Russian president, Vladimir Putin, Dr. Vladimir Putin, actually, because he's a PhD in economics. You may not know that.
well, good job he doesn't call himself doctor, because that would be
a slightly more impressive title, right. Being president the Russian elected president.
Right. Okay, you seem enamoured. Go ahead.
Anyway, the key thing is that whereas the Europeans, who I see as basically, quite frankly, I told my MP about this phrase earlier this week on Monday. I told her, you know, that it's time for Britain to stop supplying arms to Ukraine, but that's a separate issue.
You told that to your MP?
Yes.
And what response did you get?
Well, she heard me and we had a good conversation. You know, this is a private discussion between a member of the Labour Party, a backbench Labour Party MP. Anyway,
You're refusing to tell us the details because it's a private discussion, which you brought up.
I've just given you... I will give a readout on the conversation in an email at some point.
I'll look forward to that.
Yeah. Anyway, the key thing is that whereas the Europeans, and I'm now going to use the phrase, are basically a bunch of broken biscuits, they are not a superpower, whereas Russia is a superpower.
In what regard is Russia a superpower and European countries aren't?
Well, for a start, Russia is a scientific superpower that has... got dominance in space technology.
Okay. Dominance over who?
In terms of their achievements in space technology.
Which are what?
Well, for a start, they were the first power to go into space. Have you heard of Yuri Gagarin?
Really? You're still celebrating that?
No, I'm getting to the point. Anyway, the point that... The key point is that it's brilliant that Vladimir Putin,
Dr. President Vladimir
Putin, Donald Trump have met together, whereas the Europeans have had week in, week out, month in, month out to send a politician to Moscow, and they failed to do it. Whereas,
I think you need to be invited.
They
If you just show up without an appointment, I think you'll be met with a stern response.
Yes, but the point is that as Professor, and of course he's clever as well, Professor Oliver, Jeffrey Sachs of Columbia University has sarcastically pointed out, and he's brilliant as well, Professor Sachs. Professor, incidentally.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard he was a professor.
The point.
There's another point.
The point is that he's saying that the Europeans are meeting with, sarcastically, with Zelensky for breakfast, for lunch, and for evening meal, but they failed miserably to send any kind of representative to Moscow to have a proper meeting to discuss the Russian point of view.
Right, OK, again, you have to be invited. You can't just show up. I'm assuming that that last was the point in a forest of points that we had to hack our way through to get to the end of it. Thanks, Malcolm. Ewan Grant is the former strategic intelligence analyst and expert on Ukraine and joins me on the phone now. Hello, Ewan.
Hello there. I'm glad to hear you all.
So what are your thoughts
on today?
Yes, okay.
Today.
What are your thoughts on what's happened today?
Well, I'm by nature a glass half empty person. I've seen the shambles of European efforts to work with Ukraine and how, but from a very different perspective to the previous gentleman, I would remind him about superpowers, that Jim Lovell died last week, the astronaut. The real superpower there was how the United States got him and his men back. That superpowerism.
Yeah, I think our last caller was somewhat confused, but anyway.
Indeed, yeah. But having seen the failures the Europeans have consistently done, the overdependence on the United States, I am very cautiously optimistic. Frankly, even if we've got the talk of these so-called guarantees, the fact that they're coming and repeated and mentioned by Trump in the presence, in the flesh, in the East Room, including with people who really are well informed, and I do include Keir Starmer, President Stubb of Finland, who certainly knows what it's all about. We may have the basis for facing up to and facing down the Russians, and it's stabilizing the lines.
Do you think that Donald Trump has actually done Europe a favor, if not in the short term, then in the long term, by which I mean we now realize that particularly under this current leadership, we can't rely on America at all? They're completely untrustworthy, and we have been doing that, relying on them for a considerable number of years now, and the error of our ways has been shown to us quite starkly.
It's brutal. I don't think it's done with good intention, because I think we're dealing with an egotist here. But as you said, it's brutal, and that is the brutal truth. I would urge everybody listening to try and catch the last few minutes, the whole program indeed, of Newsnight tonight. So, of course, it only ended within the last half hour. And that point is made forcibly by quite a few of the panelists in the studio. It's worth listening to every minute.
Well,
it's wake-up time.
Wake-up time. All right, thanks very much, Ewan. That's Ewan Grant, former strategic intelligence analyst and an expert on Ukraine. Wake up! And I do believe that that's exactly what is happening. We've realised that we can't rely on what used to be old reliable. They are reliable no more. And from there, Seattle, Oliver. Oliver.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, even though I don't
believe for 1 second that Trump has the interest of Ukraine and Europe at heart in anything he does, it is a good thing, at least I think, seems to be moving, because eventually this war is going to have to end. Now it's obviously how it's going to end that matters. And I, you know, at the end of the day, what's going to matter is the land. I don't see Putin finishing this war by retreating to the borders that he had before he started that so-called special operation. So I think that's pretty much a given. The best solution, I mean, the best outcome, which I doubt about, would be a referendum in the Donbass region, in that area, to ask the people, independent one, with supervision from countries that would be acceptable by both parties, like Brazil, Turkey, other countries that could provide people to supervise the vote. But Putin doesn't really believe in elections anyway, so I doubt that he would accept something like that. But that would definitely be the best outcome, because I don't think the majority of the people in that region, after what they've seen from him, from Putin, from Russia, they actually would like to be part of the Russian Federation. But if we don't get that, unfortunately, I mean, Europe has been shooting itself on the, you know, in the foot for over 100 years now. I mean, war after wars, Europe has weakened itself and has let others in the world decide its future. And I think that's what's showing today again with Trump, is that, you know, when Russia invaded Crimea more than 10 years ago, the rest of Western Europe, I mean, looking at Germany, France, UK, I mean, no one said anything. No. I mean, basically no sanction. We didn't do anything to tell him, please, you know, don't do that again.
Yeah, we tutted under our breath, and that was about the end of it.
Yeah, we kept doing business with them. We kept signing deals. We went ahead. Germany wanted the big pipeline to bring cheap gas to them. And the other thing you just pointed out is, yeah, this absurd. I mean, I live in the United States. I lived in England for the UK for 4 years, so I know the UK pretty well. I have family there. I'm originally from France, so I know Europe as well, but I've been living here since 1999. And it's absolutely ridiculous, the amount of weapon that Europe buys from the United States. I mean, France, for example, has become the second largest weapon exporter in the world, but 90% of the weapon that France sells it outside of Europe. Because for some reason, no one else in Europe wants to buy weapons from France except, you know, Saudi Arabia, India, and other countries, but the other countries in Europe, they all want to buy weapons from the U.S. And then what happens?
I'm past the break, but appreciate the call. I think one of the reasons that we continue to buy weapons from the U.S. That we continue to buy weapons from the U.S. is because the weapons that we already have are integrated and made to fit in the weapons that the U.S. sells. So swapping and changing weaponry between different manufacturers is quite difficult. So we've sort of gone down this path of reliance on American manufacturing of weaponry. And it's very difficult to sort of untangle ourselves from that now. But we better get on with it. Thanks for that. 0345-6060-973. This is LBC. Just after the news, we're going to take more calls, or are we going to do the weather after the news? That's a thumbs up for more calls. Thumbs up? No more calls. And we're going to take some weather news. There's some really dramatic weather happening in our backyard, and it may be coming our way. So we'll be joined by Jim Dale from British Weather Services. And that's to come after this news break with Daryl Jackson.
Donald Trump's called his meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and other European leaders very good. The US president says he's begun arrangements for a meeting between the Russian president and Zelensky after a call with Vladimir Putin this evening. A man's been convicted for his part in a shooting in East London which left a 9-year-old girl with a bullet lodged in her brain. 33-year-old Javon Riley will be sentenced next month after being found guilty of 3 counts of attempted murder and 1 of grievous bodily harm. A man's been taken to hospital with serious injuries after a tractor fell onto a motorway from a bridge following a crash in Kent. Police were called to reports of a 2-vehicle collision on the A227 overbridge near Rootham, with the tractor going over the railings onto the M20. LBC weather, cloud becoming more widespread across the UK tomorrow. Sunnier for Wales and northern Scotland. Scattered heavy showers for southwest England. A high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
Power up your business with Peugeot's new LCV range. Discover the new Partner, Expert and Boxer, available in all electric or diesel, with up to 20 driver assistance systems and complete connectivity. Now available on 0% APR with a 20% deposit. Order before 30th September 2025 to drive away in your new Peugeot van. Peugeot. Business powered. Conditional sale. Business users only. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's 18 plus. Stellantis Financial Services.
Here comes Steve. With the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow. Which can only mean one thing. Last night he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
It's Munich, 1936, and all eyes are on the capital for the upcoming Olympic Games. As athletes fight for gold and the Nazis fight for power, Detective Sebastian Wolf faces a battle of his own. In a search that will take him from high society to the city's darkest corners, Wolf is about to learn just how easily the hunter becomes the hunted. Evil in High Places is the gripping new historical thriller from the million-copy bestseller Rory Clements. Out now in hardback, ebook, and in audio.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
Relentless heat and raging wildfires continue to ravage southern Europe, with one quarter of weather stations in Spain recording 40 degrees centigrade temperatures. The blazes have burned over 500,000 hectares so far this year. That's more than double the average over the past two decades. And it's forced several overwhelmed governments in Spain and Bulgaria to seek firefighting help from the EU. Portugal has been under a state of alert since the start of the month, and it's activated the EU's civil protection mechanism and requested four Canadair water bombing planes. Meanwhile, climate change-induced flash floods have killed 337 people in northwestern Pakistan, and at least 10 people have died in a flash flood in northern China. Let's talk about this with Jim Dale. Jim is founder of and senior meteorological consultant at British Weather Services. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Nick. Hi, Nick. And it is me thinking that we go a week with nothing to do or nothing to say. Never is that, is it?
It's relatively quiet in this country, but not so anywhere else.
Ah, you say that. You say that. I'd like to begin with this country, because I read something about this will affect people going forward. You know, we all know that there's been very little rain around, etc. The drought continues, hose pipe bans, etc. But it's affecting the vegetables that come out of the fields. And apparently, so the farmers are saying, they're going to be pint-sized veg, smaller broccoli, cauliflower and cabbage onto the supermarket shelves. Now, doesn't that hit home? Because my guess is the supermarkets will not lower their prices for what you're getting half a pint of, if you see what I'm trying to say. So there we go. That's one of them.
It's a difficult position for the farmers to be in, because last year they had a washout, so they couldn't really grow very much then. This year they've had completely the opposite, which has been completely arid for the whole of the year. I barely remember it raining at all. And of course you can't grow crops like that. So they've had 2 years in a row. And I would imagine that many farmers would be, if not going out of business, on the verge of just giving up.
And that's where it is. That's where it is. And yet we have Mr. Farage walking around in his wellies, you know, saying how good he is to farmers, yet denying that climate change takes place. I mean, you know, how can farmers listening to this believe the guy when he's, you know, him and his lieutenant, Mr. Tice, climate change is garbage. Man-made climate change is garbage. And I'm quoting the BBC on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, this is when it's going to hit home. So watch the next few weeks as the broccoli and your tiny cabbage arrive.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how many pairs of Union Jack socks you've got. If you're actually acting against the interests of the country, it doesn't make you a patriot.
No, not in the slightest. Maybe them Union Jacks could go out and carry a lot of these small cabbages just to make it up. It'll make it sound like it's something decent. Use it as a shopping bag or something. But anyway, you know, that's where we stand. But that's probably that, you know, you've mentioned the big ones, haven't you? Should we just cover them off a little bit?
Yeah.
I, I, you know, the Spain one, the Portugal one, and it isn't just, is it? It was Turkey, it was Greece, it was Italy, and it's other places as well as we speak. Even the Ukraine, I'm looking at the wildfire maps on the internet there, and you can see them quite clearly. So yeah, look, the PM of Spain described what he's seeing in two words: sadness and desolation. Those two words, particularly the desolation one, it echoes of World War situations. You know, after we just talked about the Japanese one. That's just passed. But no, think about the First World War and the Somme and places like that. Now, when you get these sort of wildfires, that's what it turns it into. It turns it into a barren nothingness where, you know, it really is pitiful to see what is going on. And you mentioned the acreage. And I could mention Canada here, seeing at the moment the second largest wildfire acreage burnt on record. So probably soon it'll reach. And remember, summer isn't usually the time when you see the wildfire. It's usually the autumn time when everything's died off. That's the normal. I'm not saying you don't get wildfires in summer, you do, but the majority tend to occur in the autumn time. We're not even there yet. So this is very sad. It's the northwest of Spain and the north of Portugal particularly. What can you say? It is what it is, and probably there'll be more before it's over.
Yeah, I've been talking to people in France, and they, I mean, yeah, we've had what we would describe as a pretty good summer, but for them it's been absolutely punishing. And in the south of France, they've week after week after week of temperatures that are in the sort of mid-90s, but the feels-like temperature is 105. Now, you can't really do anything in that kind of heat.
No, you can't. You cannot. And Cordoba, this is now the south of Spain. This is a record, and it was made today that it's reached 40 degrees C for 38 days or more during the course of the summer. So 38 days has been reached today. So 40 degrees or more. Anybody's been that area, Seville, Cordoba, on the other side of the Marbella, etc. And I know it well. It's a baking plain. It's the sort of thing that you see on these horror films, you know, these science fiction films that you see on TV, etc. There's nothing there, etc. Look, it's absolutely stifling. And isn't this just a massive message to what is going on? And if you don't get the wildfires and the extreme heat that we're seeing, and by the way, Blackheath Common in Surrey wildfire there as well. If you don't get all of that, then you get the other side. You've mentioned China. You've mentioned certainly North Pakistan, the little village, Bishnoi. You know, we're talking now in that area, probably in excess of 600 people, many of them not found yet, obviously. Now, that part of the world, it's where the monsoon comes in. And yeah, it's the monsoon. I'm not necessarily going to say that's never happened before. Of course it's happened before. We all know that. We see floods. What the difference is here, Bishnoi, what tends to happen is that that very humid air, that very hot air comes up from the south, and it's the immovable object called the Himalayas, the foothills of the Himalayas in this case. And what we get on top of that with the warming of the atmosphere is glacial retreat. By that, I mean the melting off. So what happens is when you get the rainfall combined with that, you get massive deluges that just pour down the mountain, taking massive rocks and mud, and you name it, with it. And that's what it's this poor village and essentially buries it alive. And by the way, that's not the first time that's happened in Pakistan this year, and it won't be the last. So these things are really hitting home, even before we start mentioning, for example, Hurricane Heron, which is another one on the other side of the of the world, which thankfully, in certain circumstances, is not going to hit the land. It's not. It's gonna brush past the North Carolinas. It's gonna take a week actually to sort of move up and through until it hits Newfoundland and gets picked up by the jet stream and then starts moving in our direction. Now, look, the beauty about this one, or the ugliness about this one, is it moved from a category one, almost, I say, a sedate thing in the middle of the Atlantic, not doing a lot, to a category five within the matter of 24 hours. Again, another record, borne by I use the word extreme heat of the North Atlantic, where it's never been before.
Yeah.
So these things have a, you know, there's a result of this. This is what you kind of get. And we wait now to see the rest of the hurricane season, because it's still fairly young in its age. We'll see how that one goes on as time. And by the way, Hurricane Erin will not come to the UK as a hurricane. The ashes we may see probably just after the bank holiday weekend in terms of a rain band that comes in. So thankfully it does stay out there and do its business in that respect.
I was reading the other day about urban fire waves, which is something that, you know, it's one thing to talk about, you know, wildfires in the countryside. But when you get a fire wave in town, because because it's rained so little and the vegetation, what there is in town, has, you know, lost its moisture into the air, and it just becomes tinderbox. Just the idea of a wave of fire going through a city, I mean, if that doesn't make people sit up, then I don't know what will.
Okay, well, in terms of where that came from, that's the Imperial College of London. And I like to give labels as well, because they stick in the mind, not just a wildfire, but this is a fire wave. So a fire wave is, as you described, when it goes through a village, a town or a city very quickly, a bit like the Fire of London, which killed 6 people, not 600 people, as historians tell us. So I'm going to use, we don't have to think back too far. Los Angeles was exactly that.
Yeah.
The Los Angeles wildfire was a fire wave. It was one of those that actually, and look, most of these things happen in, or if they're going to happen, they're going to happen in villages and towns that are rurally based, not necessarily big cities. It happened in Los Angeles for sure, but the fuel is the buildings themselves and what's around it, the brush, if you like. So a bit of both. And once it takes hold, and remember, you've got to have a bit of wind attached to it to make that happen, then, yeah, devastation happens very quickly. But always remember, in terms of a wildfire, it's not the fire itself, it's the breathing in of the smoke. And that's what kills most people when you get a wildfire.
Hmm.
So you've got to be, you know, that's your first port of call if you ever get caught in one, to make sure that you can breathe, put things around your face, etc., that will stop the smoke inhalation coming into you. So it's a tough one, but that's the first thing that you've got to be aware of. The second thing will be the flames themselves.
Right. Okay, let's talk about the weather, because it does seem to have changed a bit. It almost seems like summer is over and we're charging into autumn now.
Well, I'll tell you what it feels like. It feels like a normal British summer,
yeah,
does it?
Yeah, exactly,
not?
Right. Yes. Grey skies, a little bit of rain, quite windy, feeling chilly. Yeah.
A little bit. But look, let me be a little bit more positive than that. You know, the sun has shined in the last few days and for the last week or so. And it will continue to do so as we go through it. Like high pressure. That's what we've got. Big cell of high pressure, which is nice. It's perfect. It doesn't mean we're dragging in all that hot air. I think as we go towards the weekend and Erin gets a bit closer, we perhaps will start to sort of pick up the temperatures, even into the bank holiday weekend, maybe 27 degrees, that type of thing. I'm thinking is going to be happening. But look, within all of that is your drought, is your no rain, because that's basically what I'm looking at for the next 7, 8, 9 days. And then we come to about the 10th day. Now, the change of month, change of weather. Sometimes happens like that. And I think we're going to start to see an increase in the rain. So very, very little rain, particularly for the east and south of the country, a little bit more north and west, but generally not a lot, if any, towards the end of this month. And that's a long way off, let's face it. So, but I think September, as last September, probably, arguably, we'll create more of a balance and we'll start to get that Atlantic back in and start to see, albeit probably coming in deluges, a lot more rain than we've seen. So we can look forward to that one and we'll see what we get as the penny turns and we see the other side of it.
Very good to talk to you, Jim. Thanks for that. That's Jim Dale, founder and senior meteorological consultant of British Weather Services. Now, we're going to take a short break and then back to your thoughts on the extraordinary events today, which did not result in any kind of agreement, as far as we're aware, but I think as much as happened was they are agreeing to talk further in the hope of an agreement at some point yet to be decided. But the actual optics of all of the European leaders hot-footing it over to America to play defence to Vladimir Zelensky in the hope that the scenes that happened when he went to Washington last time around didn't recur. It's a little bit embarrassing, but I suppose if it leads to something positive, it will have been worth it. I just wonder whether you think that it will lead to something positive or whether this was a giant waste of time. Does Vladimir Putin actually want peace, or is he just playing us? 0345-6060-973, LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
A second council has vowed now to remove British flags attached to lampposts as part of a patriotic campaign. Can you see how it might be provocative? Simon's in Exeter.
A flag of St. George are being sullied by the far right, so I can understand why the council is worried about it.
Ahmed's been waiting very patiently to come on the radio this morning.
People should be proud to wave the country's flag. As you can see from my name, I'm an ethnic minority. I just moved to the UK about 6, 7 years ago. Okay. Where I come from, the Middle East, people wave the flag. There is no shame in that.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
What time is it?
8 a.m. And I've already meditated, stretched, and been for a big run.
How?
It's my new Samsung Galaxy Watch 8 Classic. It's got sleep tracking and bedtime guidance to remind me when to go to bed. So I always wake up early and fresh.
And you made me coffee.
That's mine.
Oh.
Buy the new Galaxy Watch 8 Classic today at Samsung.com. Requires smartphone on Android 11 or above with the latest version of the Samsung Health app. Intended for general wellness and fitness purposes only.
We know that you're always looking for an excuse to host a barbecue. If you need another reason, there's a £3 for £12 offer on a range of delicious barbecue food online or at your local Waitrose. You'll be spoiled for choice with succulent soy and tamarind chicken kebabs, juicy pork chorizo and manchego burgers, or king prawn kebabs dressed in a vibrant soy, lime and honey glaze. All you've got to do now is decide who to invite. Let your summer side out with Waitrose. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Minimum online spend and delivery charges apply.
Here comes Steve with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair. And if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
Okay, train from London to peaceful Peterborough.
Ning Park this way, huh?
Gorgeous. Wow. Never thought I'd be this into bird watching.
Did you see it? Lovely plumage.
Train home. Brilliant day. Oh, gotta rent bikes next time to see the Big Lake. And more birds, obviously.
Download the Thameslink Railway app and save with advanced tickets. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, we are talking about the events in Washington today. This from the New York Times, citing the Kremlin, says Yuri Ushakov said that Putin and Trump had a, quotes, frank and very constructive phone conversation about the meeting with Zelensky and the European leaders at the White House. The statement, cited by Rossiya 24, a state-run news channel, said that the Russian and American leaders had agreed to appoint more senior negotiators for direct talks between Russia and Ukraine, but did not mention whether Putin himself would participate. And our reporter Simon Marks concludes that they have not agreed to a Putin-Zelensky meeting, but to more meetings between lower-level officials. Also, all of the leaders are now staying at the White House for dinner. Surprising news for the kitchen, he says. Yeah, I bet. Limerick. Hello, Vincent.
Good evening, Nick. Great to be with you tonight.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, just some, I suppose, some serious and lighthearted reflections after today's Rocky Horror Show. Mm-hmm. I think, look, I was quite amazed. I think probably a lot of people may have been amid all this display of sycophancy today in the White House, there was no mention, no questions, no comment raised about that horrendous latest Russian attack, that drone attack that happened within 24 hours previously on that city of Kharkiv, that devastating loss of life, I think, including an entire family wiped out.
Yeah, at least 10 people killed, yes. Before...
Quite astonishing. I mean, seated at the court of Donny around that table, none of the European leaders, I would have expected them to certainly condemn that attack and that loss of civilian life. Equally, I think that sycophancy now seems to extend to the press corps because in the press conference, nobody asked Trump about that. I certainly would have as a journalist myself. That would have been the first question on my lips. It seemed to have been a glaring omission today, in my view.
Yeah, if Vladimir Putin is actually interested in peace, then he would not be bombing both the city that you just mentioned and also Zaporizhia on the same day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he operates on two levels, and I think it's becoming increasingly clear that he is operating on two levels. One is the military campaign, or what he euphemistically calls his special operation in Ukraine. I mean, that continues, and it will continue. He will continue to achieve his aims and on a military level. And then, of course, he operates on the other level of playing games diplomatically, and the game playing and the vanity, appealing to his vanity, continues. But, you know, on a lighter note, looking at the escapades today and the shenanigans in the White House, quite intrigued by it. Looks as if Zelensky has been sort of schooled by people like Keir Starmer in the Rose Garden as to how to handle the great tangerine Dr. Strangelove.
Handle him like a grumpy baby.
I think as Quentin Letts, the sketch writer for the Mail, put it, handling him like a Ming vase, you know, one false move. But it seemed to be schooled to the extent that you've got to pull a rabbit out of the hat. Keir Starmer, as we know, he pulled his rabbit out with the King's invitation for that unprecedented second the state visit. But today, I was quite perplexed by this strange rabbit that Zelensky produced, this letter from his wife to Melania. I mean, are the two wives now negotiating the future of Ukraine?
Well, this is after Melania supposedly wrote a note about, just think about the poor children, which was supposed to be passed on to Vladimir Putin
on a day when the poor children of Kharkiv were killed.
Were dying.
The other unusual aspect, I thought, the sartorial requirements seem to have changed today for Zelensky. Listening to the reports in Sky News earlier, they were referring to some sort of instructions that had come from the White House that he would sort of brush up his act a little bit and put on a collar and tie. But just looking at him there, it didn't seem to be a suit or a collar.
It was a suit of some sort, but not quite.
I think it was of sort, yeah. I mean, usually the usual appearance, sartorial appearance, would be that sort of moth-eaten old tunic. But today seems to have produced maybe a slightly better version of the tunic fished out from the back of his wardrobe.
Yeah, like a suit from wartime, but no tie, though. So maybe he stood his ground on that. Thanks for that, Vincent. Manor Park. Hello, Steve.
Hey, sorry. Good evening. Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, coming in loud and clear.
Excellent. Nice to meet you again, Nick. I love your show, so there you go.
Thanks.
But I did nod my head up a little bit. I hope I got a little time to speak with you. I did nod my head up a little bit in terms of one thing you said, and all of the LBC producers keep saying it, and everybody else on the news keeps saying it, and it's simply untrue, you know. And I'll tell you what that is. And if you want my...
Steve, please speak.
Invented Global Media Corporation.
Please speak directly into the phone. Yes, what is it that has exercised you so?
It's exercised me, yes. Can you hear me better now?
Go ahead.
All right. It's the fact that you keep saying, and everyone keeps saying, that the Ukraine gave away their nuclear weapons. That's simply untrue. They were never Ukraine's nuclear weapons. They were Russian's nuclear weapons, and we all know that. Well, yeah, so why do we keep saying that Ukraine gave away their nuclear weapons? Why?
Well, because that's exactly what happened. I mean, you redraw the map and Ukraine becomes a separate country from the... it used to be in the USSR.
Whose weapons were they?
The USSR, which does not exist anymore. It doesn't exist anymore, Steve.
Yeah, it became Russia, didn't it?
Well, wait. Parts of it became Russia.
I'm going to talk over you. Go on.
Parts of it became Russia, Steve.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Thanks for that. Just a little bit too penetrating on the ear. Other than that, good job. Stephen says, no matter the outcome, we need to push EU peacekeeper troops into Ukraine. That'll change the negotiating options. Russia will need to think again, and then they can start negotiating. Well, it would be good if Europe did actually start taking a leading role in this and not gifting it to Donald Trump, who does not have their best interests at heart, let's face it. I mean, has the man ever done anything for anybody other than himself? Christian says, Europe must finally grow up. The United States is no longer a reliable partner. It's not their role at all to decide the future of a European country. Let the infantile president destroy his country and let us finally take responsibility for our own continent. If necessary, we'll buy the weapons from the US that we don't have, and then Trump will have a deal he can celebrate. Yeah, that doesn't sound too far from the truth. After the news... the sales of the weight loss drug Ozempic are reportedly up by 500 to 600% in Britain following the announcement of price rises of its popular competitor, Mounjaro. And where humans lead, their dogs tend to follow. And now it seems that it might even apply to weight loss wonder drugs. I'll talk to an expert in canine genetics and obesity later on. That's to come. Have you got any experience of using these weight loss drugs? And I'd be interested to hear what that experience has been like. 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, European leaders, including President Volodymyr Zelensky and the Prime Minister, are remaining at the White House for dinner after a day of talks with Donald Trump over Ukraine. The US President says he called Vladimir Putin in Moscow and made arrangements for a face-to-face meeting between the Russian President and Ukraine's President Zelensky. Here's LBC's Washington correspondent, Simon Marks.
After the White House meetings wrapped up, President Trump took to social media to announce security guarantees for Ukraine will be provided by the Europeans in coordination with the United States. It is not clear what that means. He said he called Vladimir Putin and that the Russian leader will meet President Zelensky one-on-one before a trilateral meeting that then includes President Trump. But the Kremlin is pouring cold water on that claim, a top Putin aide telling Russian media that lower-level negotiations will resume between the two countries and offering no indication that Vladimir Putin will take part. Simon Marks, LBC, Washington.
Well, meanwhile, Germany's Chancellor has been holding a press conference following that meeting between European leaders and Donald Trump. Frederick Merz says that there is a feeling that these are decisive days for Ukraine and added that expectations today were not just met but exceeded. In other news, a man's been found guilty for his role in a shooting in East London that left a 9-year-old girl with a bullet lodged in her brain. 33-year-old Javon Riley's been convicted of 3 counts of attempted murder after it happened in Hackney in May last year. Senior politicians, including the Northern Irish First Minister and the SNP's Westminster leader, are calling for Parliament to be recalled to discuss Gaza. In a joint letter, they're asking for the Prime Minister to impose immediate sanctions on Israel. Sir Keir Starmer has said the UK will recognise a Palestinian state in September unless Israel takes steps to end the conflict. A man who killed a great-grandfather when he crashed after pulling a wheelie on an e-bike has been given 8 years detention. 20-year-old Dylan Green hit the 86-year-old as he stepped into the road in Burnley in Lancashire in March last year. And the private members club business Soho House has been sold for £2 billion to a group of investors. New York-based hotel giant MCR Hotels is leading the consortium, which also includes a private equity firm and the actor Ashton Kutcher. LBC weather, cloud becoming more widespread across the UK today, sunnier for Wales and northern Scotland, scattered heavy showers for the southwest of England later, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Sales of the weight loss drug Ozempic are reportedly up by 500 to 600% in Britain following the announcement of price rises of its popular competitor, Mounjaro. Let's talk about this and its implications with Dr. Simon Cork. Dr. Cork is a senior lecturer in physiology at Anglia Ruskin University and specialising in obesity and weight loss drugs. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening.
So what is the implication, then, of this price rise on one of the weight loss drugs? Can they be swapped for another without any complications?
So, well, we know that about 500,000 people, anecdotally, are privately paying for Mounjaro. That is the most effective weight loss drug that's on the market at the minute. And most of those are paying privately. The implications for those patients when the price rises from, it's about £120 for a month supply now, the proposed increase is that it's going to go up to about £330. That will become very difficult, I think, for a lot of people to justify the continued purchase of those drugs. They do work in a very similar way to the other drugs. So Ozempic is the most well-known other drug, and Wegovy does work in a similar way, but the overwhelming evidence for Mounjaro is that the effects on weight loss for that drug are more substantial than they are for the others. So patients who switch may find that their weight loss journey stalls a little bit, that their weight goes up slightly, but certainly most of the patients will see a benefit with other medications that are perhaps more favourable in price.
Right, so if you switch from one drug, I mean, I think Mounjaro is called the King Kong of weight loss drugs, isn't it? So what does it do that its competitors don't?
So it works in a similar manner. The drugs in general work with a hormone called GLP-1. So these drugs mimic this naturally occurring hormone. Mounjaro also targets another hormone as well, which the other drugs do not, and that seems to give it the added advantage in terms of weight loss. So that's the main difference. In terms of their safety profiles, in terms of their side effects, they're very, very similar. But this additional hormone that Mounjaro targets appears to give it a slight edge in terms of weight loss.
And what does it do to the body? Does it actually reset the body to be comfortable at a different weight, or does it just stop you thinking about food all the time?
It kind of does both. So the way I describe it to my medical students is that it's a bit like switching the heating off. So your body weight is set a little bit like your thermostat. Everybody has a particular weight in which they naturally settle, in the same way that your thermostat is set to a particular weight. Now, if your house becomes cold, then the thermostat kicks in, it turns the heating on to bring the temperature back up. That's the same with what happens when you lose weight. So when you lose weight, your brain registers that, and it does a few things. It makes you really hungry. Your metabolic rate goes down. You start to feel grumpy. You think about food constantly. These drugs switch off the heating, essentially. So they're switching off that physiological response that is aiming to bring your body weight back up. So it makes it much, much easier for patients to lose weight through diet and exercise alone. Normally, that's really, really difficult because of that physiological effect, but these drugs switch that. They switch the central heating off, essentially, to keep body weight quite low.
Is it sort of like a pain relief, a sort of pain suppressant, in much the same way aspirin or something will stop a bruise from, you know, thrumming? Then these weight loss drugs will stop will sort of alleviate the pain of not having food.
It's an interesting way of thinking about it. I think what we have to realise is that obesity and the weight loss that people try to achieve when they're trying to lose weight from obesity is a physiological response. It's a normal biological process that's trying to preserve body weight. Now, this was a really good mechanism for survival when humans were nomadic and were didn't have Tesco's and things was down the road. In the current climate, food climate that we're in, it's pernicious. It makes it much more difficult for people to lose weight. So all of these drugs are really helping patients to lose weight by switching off that normal, that natural physiological response to weight loss, which is really there as a survival mechanism. So we have to think about obesity and weight loss, really, that patients trying to lose weight normally are really fighting a losing biological battle most of the time. It's really, really difficult for patients to lose weight through diet and exercise alone. These drugs help by switching off that normal physiological response that's associated with weight loss.
So it's kind of like self-control in a jab.
It's more than self-control, and I think part of the difficulty with the discussion around obesity and its framing it as a disease is around this narrative that it's a lack of self-control and it's people's own lifestyle choices. I mean, we have to move away from that, and one of the hopes I have around the success of these drugs is that actually it reframes obesity as being a condition, a disease that is really, really difficult to treat. It has multiple similarities with, for example, high blood pressure. In the way the biology, the physiology of how it's controlled. Now, we don't say that people who have high blood pressure shouldn't be treated in the same way that we do say for obesity. So I'm hopeful that these drugs change the narrative in how we think about obesity and how we think about how we treat it in the future.
And does it reset the body to tend towards a lower weight, or do you have to keep taking it forever in order to maintain that lower weight?
So the clinical trials that have looked at people that have been on these drugs and then looked at the same population of patients who have subsequently come off them find that those patients do typically put the weight back on. And as I said, the physiological response, your body's response to weight loss, which is that increasing hunger, that decrease in motivation to move, in metabolism, the thought process of hunger, they all get switched off by this drug. Now, they're still there. They're still ticking around in the background, but they're just suppressed and switched off by these drugs. So as soon as you come off these drugs, that physiological response comes back. So the hunger comes back, the grumpiness, the thought process, the food noise, people describe it as that constant food noise, all of that comes back. So it is going to be difficult for patients who do come off these drugs, who find that they can't afford them anymore, or who aren't eligible for them on the NHS. It will be difficult for those patients. But that's the physiological response to the weight loss will undoubtedly for many patients come back.
And is it like crash dieting? Because as far as I'm aware, what it does to you is increase your ability to eat much, much less. But that's crash dieting, isn't it? Isn't that bad for you?
It depends over what time scale people lose weight and what they're doing. So people will find that depending on what kind of exercise and diet changes they're making, their weight loss will be, their trajectory will differ. So in clinical trials, the weight loss was typically over a year in which they lost their body weight, which is much quicker than most people would lose weight through diet and exercise alone. I don't think there's really any medical definition of a crash diet. I would say that there are potential consequences for people who lose weight too quickly. So gallstones, for example, can be a consequence of losing weight too quickly. So I would say I'm not sure I would describe it as a crash diet, because the idea with this is certainly if it's prescribed in a through the NHS, where we have wraparound care and dietetic advice, would be that it's a controlled weight loss journey for patients. Now, if people are buying them privately and concerned about money and concerned about the expense of these drugs, then they may find that they want to get that weight loss more rapidly. But I would always advise patients to speak to their GP, whether they're getting them privately or whether they're getting them through the NHS, to get advice when they're taking these drugs.
And what kind of side effects do they have?
Mainly gastrointestinal, so things like nausea, vomiting, constipation. Those tend to be transient, and the way that, certainly if you get them through the NHS, the way that they try to minimize those is to go through a stepwise approach. So patients start on a very low dose. When they can tolerate that, their dose is gradually increased. There are some rare but significant side effects that patients should be aware of. So gallstones I've already mentioned. There is a link with pancreatitis as well. And again, this is really points to the importance of making sure the patients are taking these drugs with some medical supervision and guidance.
I mean, I've read of some really quite alarming side effects. Is it true that people have experienced a loss of sight?
There's a paper that's been published. It's a very small observational study, so it's not, at the minute, it's correlation rather than causation. So we need some more studies on that to determine whether that's the case.
I've also heard reports of suicidal thoughts.
So that is that's been shown to some extent. Again, the link between the two is not clear. What is of note is that prior to these drugs coming out, bariatric surgery was the only really effective treatment for weight loss in patients with obesity. There is some link with patients with bariatric surgery that sometimes they may develop suicidal ideation. Now, the difficulty with those patients is you cannot reverse the surgery. With these drugs, if patients do experience adverse side effects that they can't tolerate, or that the risk of which exceeds the benefits of taking them, they can stop taking the drug and those side effects are alleviated. So in terms of where we are for treatments with obesity, I would say that these drugs have that benefit compared to any alternatives that we have, for example, surgery, and that you can stop taking it and those side effects stop. I should also, what is interesting, so you're talking about the negative side effects, there are some really positive effects that we didn't anticipate coming from these drugs. So there does appear to be a decreased risk of Alzheimer's disease with patients that take these drugs. There's a decreased risk of cardiovascular disease as well, independent of weight loss. So I think we should be looking at these drugs in the whole, not just talking about the risks, but also some of the other positive effects that these drugs may be used for in the future.
But don't those positive effects depend on you continuing to take these drugs essentially forever?
Yeah, but as I said before, there's very close biological links between obesity and the way that body weight is regulated and the way that blood pressure is regulated. Now, we wouldn't say to someone with high blood pressure, your blood pressure has come down now, or you've been on these drugs for a certain number of years, we're going to take you off them. We would treat these patients for life. We treat many diseases for life. We have to reframe obesity not just as an aesthetic issue, not just an issue of how one looks, but it's an issue of it's a disease state, and it's an issue which impacts health. And so there is no reason why we should think about treating it any differently to how we treat about other diseases. It's a disease that requires lifelong management. And if that requires lifelong medication, then we treat that in the same way that we do other diseases.
Yeah, but most people who are taking this are taking it privately, aren't they? And if the price has just gone up to £300 a month, then there's not many people who could afford that forever.
No, and I think that stems with the number of people who are desperate for some treatment around body weight, some effective treatment. We've lagged behind in this area of research and this area of treatment. The NHS has lagged behind this as an area of intervention for a long time because obesity is not really being seen as a disease state. The criteria for getting this on the NHS are very, very tight. You have to. There's only very few people in the UK relative to the population who will be eligible to get these drugs on the NHS. The fact that so many people are taking them privately really does point to the fact that people are desperate for help in losing weight, and it's such a stigmatized area of medicine that it doesn't surprise me that people are reaching out when there is an effective treatment out there.
But do you think that a lot of, if not most, people who are taking it privately aren't taking it because they're morbidly obese? They're taking it because they want to look fit on the beach or to take better selfies?
I wouldn't say that. And I think, again, where there's pointing to this stigmatization of body weight and obesity as being an aesthetic issue rather than a health issue, but also, again, points to the difficulty. And I would say the silent difficulty that people have with when they're trying to lose weight you only have to look on social media to see that any time somebody talks about weight loss drugs or about medical interventions for losing weight, people have all sorts of opinions about how one can do that, which are not backed up with science. Even medical professionals themselves are often stigmatized against people who have obesity. So this isn't just about, you know, looking better. This is about the health. This is about people's you know, health benefits, that they're wanting to be healthy. But it's also about the recognizing that people, regardless of their body weight, finding it really, really difficult to lose weight through diets and exercise and the advice that we've been given in the past, because from a physiological, biological perspective, it is very, very difficult to do that.
Very good to talk to you, Doctor. Thanks so much for your time. That's Dr. Simon Cork, Senior Lecturer in Physiology at Anglia Ruskin University, specialising in obesity and weight loss drugs. Now, I'm going to take a short break, and then your thoughts about this, about the weight loss drug industry, this sort of magic jab that allows people to drop the weight that they might not otherwise have been able to do, and what your experience has been on it, if anything, and whether the increase in price has changed your attitude to these drugs. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
LBC.
Right. Any chance you could give me a hand with dinner?
Sure. Think you can manage after Dad totally smashed it last night?
Of course. I've got a HelloFresh dinner coming up, so watch out.
Wow, this is good. We're on a roll this week.
HelloFresh brings the inspiration back to dinner time. Fresh ingredients, tasty recipes, and no more staring blankly into the fridge. HelloFresh. Nothing beats dinner time.
Hello.
At Kia, we're excited to announce that the refined new Kia Sportage is available in showrooms now. Secure your test drive today to explore its advanced technology and stylish, sporty design. Order before the 30th of September to get 5.9% APR representative and £1,000 PCP finance deposit contribution. Search the new Kia Sportage to book your test drive. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So this story about weight loss drugs is, and I'm sorry to say this, all about Donald Trump. Is anything not about that man? It's a story about the increasing price of the most popular of these drugs called Mounjaro, and it's increasing because of Donald Trump. His administration has complained about him complaining. Can you imagine that? About what they call foreign freeloaders who rely on the US to pay more for medicine. And Trump said in May that his plan to impose price controls on prescription medications was inspired by hearing from supposedly a friend of his who was in London and bought the drug, the weight loss drug, for $88, and said that in New York, for the exact same thing, he paid $1,300. And Trump is blaming us for that. But it's more likely that it's actually the American public that is being ripped off by their own healthcare system. But nevertheless, we are to be punished for it. And that's the reason that Mounjaro, the American version of this drug, is going up by such an extent, which means that the alternative, which is from Denmark, has gone up in popularity by 500 to 600%. Now, I wonder if I suppose it's asking it's a long shot, but I wonder if you have taken both and can compare and contrast for us, or if you've taken any of them, what's your experience been? Bath, Laura.
Hi, Nick. You okay?
Yes, good. Thanks.
Yeah. So, I've not taken these drugs. I've unfortunately the wrong person to answer the question you just asked. But to call them what they are, like Simon alluded to, they are groundbreaking. The obesity is the pandemic of the developed world, and so these drugs have an amazing potential to really improve the quality of lives of millions of people. I think, however, because obesity is a multifactorial issue. I always get immediately suspicious of anything branded as a quick fix, and I think it's probably what makes a lot of people involved in the marketing behind these drugs sort of chomp at the bit. And you mentioned briefly at the start of the show that you were talking about this coming into the veterinary world.
Yes, I've got an interview with a vet to play after the news at 5:30.
Yeah, well, it'd be really interesting to hear that, because I think if it's got this application with humans, there's no reason why it can't be applied with animals as well. However, I'm interested to hear what they say about breeding is an issue, because a lot of the a really big reason why many dogs, for instance, struggle with weight can often be attributed to their breed characteristics as well.
Mm.
And we're continually breeding animals for aesthetic reasons at the expense of their own health and well-being.
Yeah, they're predisposed to gain weight, some animals. Pets,
I mean,
specifically.
Yeah, I think particularly some breeds sort of like your what we call brachycephalic breeds, like flat-faced breeds, like French bulldogs, for instance, are sort of a health nightmare in terms of the way they have they're predisposed to pretty much every health condition under the sun. And so I think they could be a target for where these drugs could have a lot of cut through and do a lot of good. But I worry about whether it would be branded as sort of a, you know, hey, you don't need to worry about any problems with your dog, just put them on this supplement in the same way
I think
that it's sort of done in humans slightly.
Right. I think a better idea might be not to breed dogs for our visual pleasure rather than their own health. Good talk to you, Laura. Thanks for that. Manchester, Yassine.
How are you doing?
Good,
I'm just
bringing
it up because I've been on it with the NHS now for over 12 months.
Right.
I was 323 pounds, and now I'm nearly 146.
Wow.
Off nearly 14 stone.
That's half your body weight you've lost.
Yeah, I it's a life changer, but people rely too much on the Mounjaro thinking it's a quick fix, but it's not. You've got to change your lifestyle, because I used to spend about £200 on takeaways, but since I was on Mounjaro, it was like aid. And now I just eat a lot healthier. I exercise. I can run a 10K.
But did you not have to lose the weight before you could start exercising? And
yeah,
right.
I couldn't walk 2 kilometres without getting out of breath.
Mm.
My biggest deal about it is that you've got TikTok with all these influencers thinking it's a competition. I've been on 5 milligrams, which is the second highest dose, the second dose afterwards. I've been manageable with it. I still get cravings, don't get me wrong.
Do you? Because I thought that's what it prevented from happening, cravings.
It doesn't. After a while, people go up and up to try and suppress the hunger, and it doesn't benefit them because there is a limit. But I've just changed my lifestyle. I eat a lot healthier. It's just TikTok that makes it look bad, because you've got these influencers who think they're experts on it, saying, oh, you've got to put up your dose, or get these colon tablets where you can just put it all.
Oh, well, yeah. Don't take medical advice from random anonymous people on the internet. How do you feel after that?
I feel a lot. I feel great. It saved my life. I'm now in remission on the type 2 diabetes now. I've changed my own lifestyle. I have a takeaway once in a while, but I just eat a lot more vegetables. I exercise. I go to the gym. I currently ride my bike. I've just done 40 kilometers so far.
Pretty good.
And my whole, you've got to change your lifestyle. You can't just rely on the drug.
Right.
You've just got to change it, because I've took it with another family member where they've not changed the lifestyle as much and they're not losing it as fast.
Right.
Where I've just focused more on my health, and it's changed my life.
Well, good for you, Yassine. Thanks for that. Let's see if I can squeeze at least one more in. Bracknell, Intiaz.
Hello, Nick.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. I'm enjoying listening to your show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to talk about Mounjaro. I've been on Mounjaro for roughly 4 to 5 months now, and it was recommended to me by a family member. I did try and get it on the NHS, but I didn't have all the relevant comorbidities to be able to get it that way, so I did get it separately. But I've had various issues throughout my life with weight gain, and I think a lot of them are psychological. What this has done for me is it's been able to, as your listeners have already said, it switches the noise off. I was diagnosed with ADHD 3 years ago. I've been taking some medication for that, and this has actually managed to get me off that horrible medication, because I think that's 10 times worse than anything Mounjaro could possibly be doing to your body. That was giving me sleepless nights. It was making me feel ill. A zombification, I think many people call those drugs.
Is that a known side effect then, that it also treats ADHD?
I don't think it's a known side effect that it treats ADHD specifically, but it does have this effect on what do you call it? On all these side issues you might have, cravings you might have, or, you know, things like, for example, alcohol is another one. I hear this with a lot of people. I mean, people to cope with psychological issues, they will drink, they may take drugs, they may have ADHD, they may have all these sort of secondary psychological issues or even primary psychological issues. But I think it really helps to sort of focus you, because I believe with ADHD there's an element of it that is involved with your gut. I've read this a lot in studies, and it's amazing how much stems from that. But I mean, you know, listening to the views and listening to different points of view, I feel like it gets demonized a little bit, because I think it is a medication. If someone is abusing it, that's one thing, isn't it? But if someone really needs it because they have they have various psychological problems with their relationship with food, and they also have a physical problem. You know, I was pre-diabetic. I've had various issues in my life which mean that I've leant on food as a crutch. And that's just kind of gets out of hand. I've lost 4 stone so far, but my quality of life is better. My marriage is better. My time with my children is better. All those extra effects are invaluable, really.
And so are you prepared to take this forever?
I don't want to take it forever, but I do want to use it. If you can stop all the noise in your brain from derailing all your effort, then you can put your effort into actually trying to rebuild your life. You know, trying to create healthy, as your previous caller said, you know, I have a good exercise regimen. You know, I think about what I eat now. It lets you stop to actually think.
And have you, before I could, sorry to interrupt, but have you taken yourself off it, or have you taken it continuously up till now?
It's continuous. It hasn't been that long, okay. Like I said, around 5 months. I haven't been off it, so I couldn't give you my view on what happens when what the effect is after that. Even though I dread it a little bit when I do finally have to, because any medication, you want to put yourself back into the right place and then slowly get yourself back off it, don't you? If you're able to, hopefully, you know, there's no other problems in the future that mean I have to have it any longer. But yes, you know, mentally, I want to rebuild all the elements I can within my life to say that, okay, now I'm in this place. I'm in a better place to fight now.
Yes.
I've got some more tools.
Right.
That's my thought behind it.
Okay, yes, but I understand that. Yeah, that makes complete sense. Thanks for that, NTS. I'm going to take a break for the news. We're going to change topics, but only a bit, because as weight loss treatments for pets are being created to help obese, because weight loss treatments for pets are being created to help obese animals slim down, and we'll be hearing about that after these news headlines with Daryl Jackson.
Donald Trump says he's begun arrangements for face-to-face meetings between Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky. It's following talks in the White House with the Ukrainian president and other European leaders, including Sir Keir Starmer. He's promised the US will provide security guarantees for Ukraine as part of any peace deal, and claims Russia will accept them. A man's been found guilty of attempted murder and grievous bodily harm over a shooting which injured a 9-year-old girl. 33-year-old Javon Riley didn't fire the gun but helped to plot the attack in Hackney in East London. And two Bradford City supporters have been arrested for alleged racial abuse of a club official during their game against Luton. At the same time, an away fan was arrested because of racist gestures reportedly aimed at a player. LBC weather, cloud becoming more widespread across the UK today. Sunnier for Wales and northern Scotland. Scattered heavy showers for southwest England. A high of 26 degrees.
This is LBC.
There now follows a message from the Prime Minister.
Some of you may know my husband is being held hostage. They are targeting me. They have weaponized my family. I will not be threatened. My loyalties are to this country. I will not allow it to be held to ransom. And anyone who thinks that I would has badly underestimated me.
Hostage, starring Saran Jones, coming soon only on Netflix.
You've arrived, your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
A biotech firm called Ocava has said that pets could be receiving weight loss medicine as soon as 2028, as it announced that it was beginning trials for an implant that reproduces the effect of medications for humans, such as Ozempic and Mounjaro. Let's talk about this with Dr. Eleanor Rafan. Dr. Rafan is an expert in canine genetics and obesity at the University of Cambridge and is also a veterinary surgeon. Good evening, Doctor.
Hello.
I can understand people resorting to weight loss drugs because they can't live with the hunger pangs of eating less to drop the pounds, but can't they just feed their pets less? I mean, it's not like dogs can go out and buy snacks.
No, you're quite right. In theory, it should be easy, shouldn't it, to control what our pets are eating. But actually, I think the reality for many families is that they find it very hard to deal with highly kind of foodie dogs who want to eat all the time. The impact of canine pester power is strong, and some owners just find it very difficult and find that their dogs get really miserable if they try and restrict their food. And so something sort of interventions that are targeted to stopping dogs being quite so focused on food can be quite effective, and we know that already from some of the specialist weight loss diets.
But isn't it just a sort of a positive feedback loop? In order to get the pet's attention and to, you know, bathe in the warm glow of its love, an owner will give it a snack and then the dog wants another snack. And if it sees you eating, then it's sitting there with its tongue out, just staring at you. But it only does that because you've already fed it from that position, the dining table or wherever it might be. So it's actually the owner's fault, isn't it? If you have an overweight pet, are you not a bad pet owner?
Absolutely not. No, I think it can be really hard to deal with these really highly food motivated dogs. A lot of what I do scientifically is look at the genetics of eating behavior and obesity in our pets, but in people too. And we know that genetics play a really big part on whether you are prone to weight gain, whether you're a dog or actually whether you're a human. And the main way that those genes act to make us prone to obesity is that they make us feel a bit hungrier. They make us more excited about food, than made it make us driven, and that's the kind of thing that owners of very foodie dogs will notice, and they really do put a lot of effort into begging and pestering. These are the dogs who will scavenge for every discarded chip in a walk in the park. They'll eat disgusting things. They'll sit under apple trees waiting for the apples to drop to get a snack. You know, really, really food motivated dogs who go to great lengths to get extra calories. And if you've got one of those dogs, then actually it can be really hard to break the cycle, quite apart from all the things you say about the kind of way that we bond with our pets being in large part through food.
Is there any evidence to show that an overweight owner will have an overweight pet? I mean, is it maybe a form of reinforcement of the owner's behaviour? The owner overeats to make themselves feel better, and then they get their pets to overeat to sort of legitimise their own self-indulgence.
Well, I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that it's that's reinforcing the cycle. There is perhaps something about people. There is some evidence that overweight people are more likely to have overweight pets, and perhaps a degree of kind of normalization and comfortableness with, or comfort with people being overweight is true. But I mean, I really think it's important to get the message out there that what all of the evidence that I've been collecting from thousands of dog owners now shows is that, yes, no dog gets overweight unless their owners are given too much food. But there is a huge wealth of evidence to say that there is biology driving that overeating. It's not about lack of self-control or overindulgent owners. What people are doing is failing to resist their dog's biology. They're not overfeeding them because they're complacent or careless with their dog's health.
But are there any animals in the wild that get fat? I can't think of any.
Well, in the wild, a lot of the food that we're surrounded by, you know, the animals are surrounded by, is A, hard to get hold of, and B, perhaps not quite as tasty. There are species who will gain weight, and wild animals, the kind of classic ones are animals that go into hibernation for the winter, and so bears and other even little creatures that hibernate spend the summer kind of overeating and gaining weight and becoming fat, and then they literally live off the fat of their backs through the long winter months when there's not much around to eat. And certainly lots of wild species, if given the opportunity to overeat, do become obese, and that's a big deal for zoo animals, as I understand it. Sort of overweight zoo species, when they're brought into captivity, sometimes get health problems related to overweight and obesity.
Is that exercise, though? I mean, it's an exercise thing. You don't really get to, you know, run about much in a zoo as you would in the wild.
Bit of both, really. I mean, certainly yes, there's an exercise, but actually the amount of calories that we burn off every day, even in quite an active lifestyle, is dwarfed by the amount of calories that it takes just to keep your body running, you know, unless you're an ultra marathon runner or something. And so really, the overweight obesity epidemic has more to do with food intake, and that has lots to do with our food environment, you know, what food is available. And certainly our modern domestic pets really don't have to work terribly hard to get that extra crust of toast or the bacon rind or the other snacks that they might find in their daily life. So it's pretty easy for them to work for it. And yes, as owners, we're susceptible to it. Whereas if the same dog were out in the wild having to scavenge for itself, it would either having to hunt for food or to kind of scavenge for fairly unappealing morsels around the rubbish bins. And either way, they probably wouldn't become overweight in that environment, but easily do in a kind of cushy modern lifestyle that our pet dogs tend to lead.
What role does the food that we feed our pets have? I mean, what's in pet food? Isn't it highly processed stuff that makes humans put on weight?
Well, I think there may be an emerging kind of body of evidence about that. Certainly the pet foods that are provided by most of the large pet food companies are highly processed. And there is a tension, I think, between producing affordable food, which has lower protein content, and us knowing that actually if you want an animal to feel full for longer after a meal, to feel satiated by their meals, then higher protein food is probably better for them. And so I don't think there's much scientific evidence for that out there yet, but I suspect that there is something about the food that we're feeding our pets, and it may be that people can test that sort of really objectively over time. But I think the one thing that's important to say in that conversation is, for all that those processed pet foods may be having some challenges, we can be rock solid confident that they are healthy in terms of their vitamin and nutrient balance. And when people go off piste and start to self-cook diets for their dogs, that can get people into trouble, but get pets into trouble. Because the vitamins and minerals they need aren't always there. And so I think my sort of veterinary advice is always to feed a balanced diet, formulated by a proper veterinary nutritionist. But certainly this move towards lots more sort of whole food diets for dogs may well have some basis in biology and improving that sense of feeling full after a meal.
I mean, is there any effect that eating the same thing every single day will have on a pet? Because that's what tends to happen, isn't it? If somebody goes into the supermarket and they buy 12 cans of identical product, and that's what the dog eats for its entire life.
Yeah, I think there's certainly, if you give a dog a novel food, some fussy dogs won't like them, but in general, dogs will eat more of something that's new and different. So I think they probably are a wee bit bored of what they get. But whether that's contributing to obesity, I think it would be hard to say. And in fact, I think probably from my clinical experience seeing overweight pets, it's usually the extras that dogs are getting that are probably getting them into trouble or just getting too much of their main meal. It's not so much what they're being fed as the fact that they're just getting too much. And when I say they're getting too much, you know, it's that their owners are succumbing to that canine pester power so that they get more than they really need.
And as a vet, what would you say to somebody who comes to you and says, well, you know, I'm being guilted by my pets, it's giving me the sad eyes and I can't resist? I mean, should they just be determined to do what's best for their animals versus what is more comfortable for them?
Well, no, I think a degree of kind of steeliness is worthwhile, and making that effort is certainly important. But there are some really practical things that people can do as well. If dogs are pestering for food between meals when they have to be on a lower calorie diet to try and lose weight, then you can change what you're feeding them to give a higher protein, high fibre diet. And that's available as a sort of prescription diet from vets, because that makes dogs feel fuller for longer after meals and reduces the pester power. And then often, because treats are really important for a lot of people's relationship with their pets, then we can think about what treats they're giving and see about whether the treats and the rewards, perhaps for training and things that the dogs receive, come from the dog's main ration for the day, rather than being the extras that are uncalorie counted, like the bits from the end of your plate or whatever. So there's lots of very practical things, but basically those kind of high protein, high fiber foods that make dogs feel fuller are really good. Sometimes there are ways to feed through the course of the day. You can scatter food around the garden, let the dogs go and forage for them. Perhaps some people like to freeze the canned dog food into those kind of rubber chew toys, and dogs will spend hours trying to lick frozen dog food out of those. And it kind of provides these very highly food driven dogs with a kind of an outlet for that behavior, and that can really help them.
Are there different types of animal that is more susceptible to weight gain? If people want to avoid an overweight pet, is there a type of pet that they can buy that makes that less likely?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's less well described in cats. I think it's a bit less sort of predictable there. But certainly in the dog world, there are some breeds who are notorious chow hounds and some who are relatively more likely to be fussy. And so dogs like beagles and pugs and the retriever breeds and spaniels are right up there as your kind of greedy breeds. And if you don't want to have to control their weight, then those might be ones to avoid. And then kind of it tends to be little fluffy dogs who have sort of fussier appetites, and they tend to be a bit more sensible about self-regulating what they eat. And in fact, when those dogs become overweight, in my experience, it's usually because their owners are worried they're not eating enough and then end up overeating them on delicious treats, and so that can be a problem too. So yes, certainly you can pick that out. And then there's other factors, like knowing that as dogs get older or if they've been neutered, they probably burn off fewer calories, and just being careful to cut down their ration a little bit in advance and know that they don't need as much at those stages of life.
And what's your opinion of a possible implant that would reproduce the effects of human medications like Ozempic?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking quite a lot about this recently with the news out there. And I think these are very effective medicines in humans. And there's no particular reason to believe why they wouldn't be effective and possibly safe in dogs as well. I think it would be really important that these drugs, as they come through the system, are tested in very thorough clinical trials with randomized control design that mean it's robustly proven that they're both effective and safe. They're likely to be expensive, and we know that if you can steel yourself and slim your pet by dietary change and increased exercise, then that can be very safe and very effective. And so it won't be for everyone, but there may be some families, you know, pet owner families who, for one reason or another, either need the dog or cat needs to lose weight in a hurry, or the owners have tried and failed with the food restriction, for whom it could be an effective option. And so certainly I would welcome it as another weapon in our armory of treating patients with overweight and obesity in the veterinary world.
I do have a few concerns, especially with an implant, that this is a kind of long-term dispensing of a drug that makes an animal lose its appetite to some extent. Now, it shouldn't lose its appetite completely, but it may just, you know, make them blunt their appetite to the point where we no longer have one of the most subtle markers of whether our pets are feeling well or not. You know, as a vet in practice, a lot of people come in and say, I know he's not right, he's not been eating properly. And if we give them a medicine that makes them not eat properly, it may be quite difficult to disentangle whether the dog's not eating because of it, the drugs it's on, or not eating because it's actually unwell. And that could be an issue. And then there are problems with very rapid weight loss, and we hear a little bit about that emerging from the human world now with these drugs, but particularly in cats I'd be worried, because they're prone to a potentially fatal disease called hepatic lipidosis if they stop eating completely. And so if a pussycat were given an indwelling medicine that meant that it went off its food and that happened quickly, it might worry me that that could trigger a rapid weight loss and metabolic problems as a consequence. But, you know, broadly, those things should be ironed out by effective clinical trials if done properly. And so they don't sort of scare me off completely.
Very good to talk to you, Doctor. Thanks so much for your time. Dr. Eleanor Raffan, expert in canine genetics and obesity at the University of Cambridge. Now we're going to take a short break, and then we will cross the pond a final time on this program to talk to the US political analyst Charles Feldman about today's talks in the White House between the US president, the Ukrainian president, and the other European leaders. And we'll hear what Prime Minister Keir Starmer has said about the meeting. That's all to come.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
Volodymyr Zelensky's return to the White House with a very different approach to negotiations than before. But if peace in the region is achieved, should the credit for that peace go to Donald Trump?
Richard Spur on LBC.
Because you never know what little pickles they'll get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Summer doesn't always have to mean the end of the beloved Sunday roast. At Waitrose, we're introducing a new take on the classic. The British Tomahawk Steak. Intense and full of flavour with every bite. Keep that Sunday roast feel and serve alongside barbecued potatoes and charred veg. And if there's still room on the barbecue, our beef smash burgers with bone marrow are extra thick and ready for smashing. Let your summer side out with Waitrose. Selected lines and stores subject to availability.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
Right, just before we cross to talk to Charles Feldman, there has been some reaction coming in from European leaders following today's talks in the White House. We're going to have a listen here to first Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who has been speaking outside the White House, and that will be followed by Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
Is supporting the trilateral meeting among the leaders, Ukraine, Russia and the United States? They suggest that it takes place as soon as possible, but we need for all parties to agree first. After this meeting, all of us together, and coordinating the security guarantees, President of the United States have had a contact with the Russian side, and they have been talking the possibilities of diplomatic steps. Russia suggested first a bilateral meeting, Ukraine, Russia, and then trilateral. As I have been saying, we are ready for all formats on the level of leaders, but because only the level of leaders is the platform to solve all of the issues, painful issues for us. European leaders have supported me as well that we are ready for the bilateral meeting with Putin. And then, after that, we are supporting the trilateral meeting to agree the issues on the basis of how the bilateral meeting is going to go. This is our result. It's a normal result. Good one.
Yeah, well, today's meeting was good and constructive, and there was a real sense of unity between the European leaders that were there and President Trump and President Zelensky. And we had two material outcomes. The first, on the question of security guarantees, was the agreement that the coalition of willing countries, that's 30 countries already working together on security guarantees, will now work with the US on those guarantees, coordinating, and we have already commissioned our teams to do the detailed further work on that. That's really important for security in Ukraine, for security in Europe, and for security in the United Kingdom. The other material outcome was the agreement that will now be a bilateral agreement between President Putin and President Zelensky. That was after a phone call between President Trump and President Putin during the course of this afternoon, followed by a trilateral, which will then add in President Trump. And that is a recognition of the principle that on some of these issues, whether it's territory or the exchange of prisoners, or the very serious issue of the return of the children, that is something where Ukraine must be at the table. And so these were the two outcomes that were the most important coming out of today. They're positive outcomes. There was real sense of unity. We've made real progress today. Thank you very much.
All right, that was Keir Starmer. Just before that, Volodymyr Zelensky being translated. Let's cross to talk to Charles Feldman. Charles is host of the SOS America podcast. Hello, Charles.
Hello, Nick.
A long time no speak. What did you make of what you heard today?
Well, you know, it's a case of a lot of politicians saying a lot of things, but when you get down to it, what did they actually say and what did they say? And the most important thing that was not said is there is no ceasefire. So, yes, they're going to have a meeting at some point in the future. We're told maybe within the next 2 weeks between Putin and Zelensky. Then there may be a three-way meeting between Trump, Zelensky, and Putin. We don't know when that is. All of that, by the way, Nick, is to lay the foundations for an agreement. In the meantime, what you do not hear, of course, is a ceasefire. So while all of this arranging is going on, and while all the talking is going on, the bombs keep falling, the drones keep flying, and people still are getting killed on both sides, both the Russian side and the Ukrainian side. So in terms of its practical impact today or tomorrow or next week, zero.
Yeah, and Zelensky kept saying that, he was looking forward to the next meeting, whenever that is, and he was very specific about it should be at the level of leaders. But that's not what Putin has suggested, is it? He's suggested some sort of low-level apparatchiks that might sort of discuss on his behalf.
Well, because time is on Vladimir Putin's side. The longer this goes on, you know, the Russians are winning this, regrettably, but they are on the ground. And so the longer this goes on, the longer he can stall, the longer he can get Mr. Trump to not impose harsher sanctions, the more territory he can take, the more people will get, as I said before, killed on both sides, the Ukrainian side and the Russian side. And then at some point, will it end? Well, of course it'll end. All things eventually come to an end. The question, though, Nick, is the end of what? The end of the fighting? Yes, at some point. But who ends up really being victorious? Who ends up with land that didn't belong to them? Probably the Russians. who loses land that they shouldn't lose? Probably the Ukrainians. So at the end of the day, of course it will end. And when these politicians say we're looking for peace, I totally believe them on that. But that isn't really the question. The question is on what terms, on whose terms, and with what outcome.
And the terms seemed clear when Trump produced this map, which showed the territory that Russia already holds, about a fifth of Ukraine. That seemed as though that's what he was proposing, that Russia, that Ukraine be happy with that.
Well, right. I mean, look, you know, Trump has been, I think, as clear as Trump can ever be in anything, that there's going to be, I think early on he was talking about a swap of territory. Nobody actually understood what he meant by that, probably including him. But there was supposed to be the swap of territory. So, you know, Putin wants what he has always wanted. He wants to be able to have the Ukrainians agree for the Russians to end up with land that even they have to this date not actually occupied, but he wants it anyway. And I'm talking about the eastern portion now of Ukraine, which is a critical place, as you know, for Ukraine. It is a manufacturing hub for Ukraine. It is an agricultural hub for Ukraine. So if the Russians end up with that eastern, the Donbass region of Ukraine, that's a significant victory for him. He also wants, as you know, Putin, he wants a guarantee that Ukraine will no longer seek admission to NATO. So in exchange for that, there's this talk about security guarantees. Well, what does that actually mean? Is the United States ever going to send troops on the ground to Ukraine if Ukraine is attacked again in the future? Certainly not under Mr. Trump, who is a protectionist and ran on the notion that he would keep America out of wars in the future. That would be political suicide, not just for him, but for his party. So that's not going to happen. And even on the European side, how quick will the UK, France, Germany send troops to Ukraine if needed in the event that Putin doesn't keep his promises, which, as you know, Putin has a history of not keeping his promises.
Yes. Very good to talk to you, Charles. Thanks very much for your time. That's U.S. political analyst and host of the SOS America podcast, Charles Feldman. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back or catch up on both Global Player and the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'll be back tonight at 10. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Ian Payne. But first, Richard Spur.
Good morning. Still to come, homeowners with properties worth more than $500,000 could have to pay a new annual property tax under plans to replace the controversial stamp duty. It's, well, through that scheme that maybe first-time buyers could afford to get onto the property ladder finally. I'll be asking you about that and about your experience of buying and selling. But first, Donald Trump has welcomed Volodymyr Zelensky to the White House, along with Keir Starmer and other European leaders, for talks about ending the war in Ukraine. He also held a 40-minute call with Vladimir Putin ahead of a likely meeting between the Russian president and Mr. Zelensky. Trump has said he knows exactly what he's doing here. So this morning, if this process does finally lead to peace, should that credit go to the US president?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Donald Trump says he's begun arrangements for face-to-face meetings between Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky. But top Kremlin officials are already casting doubt on that claim. It's following talks in the White House with the Ukrainian president and other European leaders. He's promised the US will provide security guarantees for Ukraine as part of any peace deal, and he claims Russia will accept them. The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, says today's meeting was good and constructive.
The coalition of willing countries, that's 30 countries already working together on security guarantees, will now work with the US on those guarantees, coordinating, and we have already commissioned our teams to do the detailed further work on that. That's really important for security in Ukraine, for security in Europe, and for security in the United Kingdom.
Peter Caddick-Adams, a military historian and broadcaster, has told LBC the stakes here are high.
We do have a rampant dictator who's already proved that he can't be trusted, that if he's left alone, then he will probably repeat his bad behaviour and stray over somebody else's border. And it's not just Ukraine where he's done it. He's been into other countries, starting with Georgia. He's also had adventures in Syria. So on past performance, there's a very Hitlerian nasty streak.
In other news this morning, a council's expected to hear later today whether it's been successful in stopping asylum seekers from being housed at an Essex hotel. Epping Forest District Council wants an interim injunction preventing migrants being accommodated at the Bell in Epping, the scene of recent widespread protests. Lawyers for the hotel argue it would set a dangerous precedent. There are concerns children are being bombarded with videos and images of unhealthy food online. In a poll by Cancer Research UK, more than half of those aged 11 to 21 revealed they've been exposed to junk food on social media by businesses or influencers in the last month. The government says new restrictions, which take effect next year, will end paid-for advertising of items high in fat, sugar and salt. Those planning a trip this bank holiday weekend are being advised to leave early to beat the traffic. The RAC is warning of long delays, with more than 17 million cars expected to take to the roads over the next 4 days. LBC weather: cloud becoming more widespread across the UK today. Sunnier for Wales and northern Scotland. Scattered heavy showers for southwest England. A high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Well, what a difference a few weeks, few months makes as Volodymyr Zelensky arrives at the White House, smiles and handshakes from Mr. Trump on this occasion, even wearing something a little more akin to perhaps a suit after the criticism he got from one journalist. He's gone back to sit in the Oval Office to meet US President Donald Trump for fresh talks aimed at ending the war in Ukraine. And of course, many European leaders also changed their plans to attend the meeting days after Trump met with Russia's President Putin in Alaska for a summit that did fail to yield a ceasefire. Given the incredibly acrimonious, embarrassing session that took place in the Oval Office last time, the Ukrainian president went, I think, to considerable lengths. It was almost as if he'd been trained by the likes of Emmanuel Macron and Keir Starmer how to keep Trump on side and stop him throwing his toys out of the pram, to be collegial, to be charming to his American hosts. Lots of thank yous. The last time, of course, we all remember what happened. And yes, dressed in a dark suit rather than his traditional military garb. But this is an interesting meeting because there also are the likes of Emmanuel Macron, Starmer, other European leaders. And my feeling is that they're there in, to a large extent, really, to try and form a mollifying filter between Mr. Trump and Mr. Zelensky so it doesn't all go wrong in the way that it did last time. Now, various other issues taking place. We understand that Mr. Trump had a 40-minute phone call with Vladimir Putin. This, we think, is likely to lead to a meeting between the Russian and Ukrainian presidents very soon, not something, of course, which has taken place since the war began. And Mr. Trump, taking to his Truth Social, has been characteristically very, very critical of those who've gone before him in an attempt to help this conflict come to an end. Sleepy Joe, all the others who we said were stupid. typical sort of Trumpian language. He says he knows exactly what he is doing. He's all about the business of solving conflicts. And generally he manages to solve one international conflict once a month. All right. Well, it's easy to be flippant about Mr. Trump. He rather lends himself to that. But this morning I'd like to know just how much hope you have for peace, given the way that this is being engineered, a big meeting at the White House, leading to potentially a meeting between Volodymyr Zelensky and President Putin. And of course, what we know so far from the Alaska summit is that Russia still believes that Crimea is very much part of its country, of the motherland, and it will not cede it.
there are question marks over the eastern territories, which Russia has already got a pretty strong foothold in the Donbass Donetsk area. The Ukrainians will want to keep that really rather concrete line of three cities, which is preventing the Russians moving any further west, and they will want to have military installations there, I think, for the foreseeable future, in the event of any other future negotiation. Putin has also said that a NATO membership for Ukraine must be completely off the cards. However, something sort of resembling a NATO-type pact has been suggested by the Europeans and the Americans, a sort of security deal. We're not entirely sure how it would work, but what it would mean would be that if Russia were to attack Ukraine again in the same sort of way, then that would be equated to an attack on the other European nations who were part of this security pact, and indeed of America. So a degree of military security from other countries, although it wouldn't be a part of NATO. This is how it's looking at the moment. I'd like to know this morning your hopes and fears for this particular process, and whether you feel that Mr. Trump should deserve the credit for a peace if it ensues. Well, Donald Trump said very clearly that war was going to end.
The war is going to end. When it ends, I can't tell you, but the war is going to end, and this gentleman wants it to end, and Vladimir Putin wants it to end. I think the whole world is tired of it, and we're going to get it ended. It was, I've done six wars. I've ended six wars, and I thought this maybe would be the easiest one, and it's not the easiest one. It's a tough one.
Not easy, pretty tough. He did suggest it might not be possible.
And it's possible it might not be able to be done. On the other hand, it's possible it will. And we're going to save thousands and thousands of lives a week. And so it's something we really have to do. And or at least we have to give it our best. It's all you can do. You can give it your best. But I think we may have a very good outcome.
And Zelensky did wear a sort of military suit this time. Not a tie, but that was commented upon.
Yes, sir. I've got a question for each of you. Yes. First of all, Mr. President Zelensky, you look fabulous in that suit.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, you look good.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, looks good.
I said someone that attacked you last time. See, I remember that.
Yeah, I apologize to you. You look wonderful. No, my first question for you, President Zelensky.
In the same suit. You see, I changed you.
Maybe yours is much better.
Well, also the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, there. And he talked to cameras and journalists after the talks.
Yeah, well, today's meeting was good and constructive. And there was a real sense of unity between the European leaders that were there and President Trump and President Zelensky. And we had two material outcomes. The first, on the question of security guarantees, was the agreement that the coalition of willing countries, that's 30 countries already working together on security guarantees, will now work with the US on those guarantees, coordinating, and we have already commissioned our teams to do the detailed further work on that. That's really important for security in Ukraine, for security in Europe, and for security in the United Kingdom. The other material outcome was the agreement that will now be a bilateral agreement between